Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Fun show lined up. We got a party cast going on. We've got Tim here. We've got Brooke here. We've got Chris here. We've got Purnell here. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good. I got some allergies going on, so y'all might hear some weird sign of shit for me today.
Sweet.
Ooh, snot. Got some Garbage Pail Kid impersonations going on. I'm all for that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes, that's right. The hotly anticipated congestion episode.
That's right. Booger Brook is on the horn. Gonna do it. What would your other name be, though?
Purnell, that's the kind of nickname that might stick.
I know.
No.
It's too good of a ring to it. You know, and what's sad is that was not my nickname as a grade school kid, but I was so snotty one year that they started calling me Snot Girl. And then I remember the name of my little male friend.
How attractive.
Dude, so I was Snot Girl, and he was like, don't pick on her. I have snot, too. And he like got snot everywhere, and then they're like, cool, it's Snot Girl and Booger Boy. And like all year, we were Snot Girl and Booger Boy. And I hope that guy's doing okay. I wonder what happened to him.
Did you fight crime as a duo?
I mean, kind of.
The Kleenex. It sounds like they were crime as a duo.
They battled against the Kleenex Cotillion.
Yeah, thank you.
They are so sinister, wasting so much paper.
I know, dude.
That's okay, because you guys got what it takes to take them down. Then again, I don't know, Kleenex is still around, but we got to find Booger Boy.
I know, man. Booger Boy, if you're listening to this, reach out to me, dude. Get at me on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm saying.
I don't remember your real name, but you'll always be Booger Boy to me.
So if you're listening to the show, first off, that's a huge downside right there. Not many people listen. So sorry. So the odds of
that
him
was
hearing
first
this
mistake, Booger Girl.
Oh,
not good. Girl, sorry.
Not girl and Booger Boy. There you go.
I don't know what we would use that soundbite for, but I want it. Want it to be an option.
I'm sure it'll play out in some way. I'm pretty sure you can come up with a good way. Get a good, if anybody's listening to it and follows her on Twitter or something, like, do a cool art piece.
Yeah.
Of her superhero alter ego. And then you take that, couple with the jingle.
Booger Boy, Snot Girl. I can't.
Dude. I got a game idea right now. Snot Girl and Booger Boy. They're like a melee combat team. And Snot Girl has like an area of attack, like sort of snot spray, but Booger Boy does like
projectiles.
It's like a ping.
Nice.
He flicks the boogers, and then Snot Girl has a booger, like a snot whip.
Y'all are towing the line real close to infringing on Booger Man, a pick and flick adventure.
I was hoping you'd say that.
I have not heard about this.
You never heard of Booger Man? You gotta mess with him.
Yeah, it's real
time.
Good.
It's time. Yeah, I heard it. I remember that was really freaking hard, though. But at least it was hard for me at the time.
Yeah, well,
speaking of Purnell sound clips, I gotta jump in here. Speaking of Purnell sound clips, Vertically Impaired subbed right before the show went live for his 51st month. Every single time I see Tony sub, I can't believe that we've been around that long on Twitch. It just,
Joe can't count that high either, so every new number is a surprise for him.
It is.
Dude, that's awesome.
I did not think you could put those
another
numbers together.
Another one?
There's a two after it? there's a fucking three again? This happened the last time. Oh, my Lord.
Numbers.
Tim, how was your week? I know you and I, we had a fun weekend. We watched some AE dub.
Yes, we did. Yes, that was part of the weekend. Part of the reason I was also very tired on Memorial Day.
Wait, where was that filmed at?
Las Vegas.
What was the Okay, I'm thinking about something different. There's a wrestler named Maki something.
Maki Ito. Yes.
Yeah.
She was in Seattle over the weekend.
Okay, yeah, because a buddy of mine, like he pretty much went to meet her or something for that wrestling event. I wonder if it's the same thing. Yeah, he was ecstatic. Like it's like his profile photo was like, yeah, you'll never be changing that. You're gonna die with this profile picture. So, and like apparently, like he took like video of like her talk, like there's someone's like Makito, yeah, or something. Like, wow, she's really personable. This is a cool person, but like. Yeah. But I'll stop derailing. I was like, at first I thought it was the same wrestling event, but
now there's a lot of wrestling events. It's nice to see in this post somewhat ish COVID ish esque time that we're still shunning COVID completely.
We're just ignoring it, and everything's going on as normal. That phase of the pandemic that we're probably in permanently, really.
Yeah. There's a lot of indies going up again. It's good to see people.
But anyway, Maki Ito is wrestling. Fantastic. I mean, she does wrestle for AEW every now and then. She did earlier on her trip to the States, but she main evented an event two nights in a row. She's like, she used to be like in a Japanese idol group. But
oh, seriously?
Yes. That's pretty awesome. She either
entrances. Oh.
Yeah, she either quit or got kicked out for being too ugly or too vulgar or something like that. Kind of the deal with her is that she's a bit of a mess. And that she swears a lot, is constantly flicking people off.
Yep, her thing at double deuces.
Yeah, she sings surprise, her own motherfuckers. Yes, she is the cutest in the world. She cries in the ring sometimes. She hits people with her abnormally large and unbelievably hard head. She is a fantastic character, and it delights me that she is catching on so fast in America, because she's fantastic. She's ridiculous.
Yeah, she won me over the first time she was on AEW, where her music hit and she sang along to it and everybody started wrestling and she just kept singing the entire song.
Was she singing while wrestling, or no, were they wrestling?
Just on the walkway, just singing the whole time.
Yep. And then at the end of her song, she hit someone with a microphone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, she's
an inspiration.
She ended up being the thing that gets me back to watching wrestling. Like, you'll see, like, wait a minute. All it took was a cool, like, pop idol with a mean hook.
No, and, do Wednesdays at 8 o'clock?
Honestly, who the hell knows? I'm all over the friggin' place half the friggin' time. But
we'll talk to you later about that.
But this is a thing that happens every Wednesday, I guess.
Yes.
Yep.
Intriguing.
Wednesday night Dynamite, 8 o'clock Eastern.
And Friday night Rampage, usually 10 o'clock.
Variable time, to say the least. But
then Sunday every couple of months.
The fact that a product can exist where they don't even have to confirm the time it airs speaks volumes. It's like,
that's because of sports playoffs. Yeah.
It's not their fault then.
No.
Yeah.
But eventually that'll go away and they'll just be on at 10 p.m. as usual.
Sports ball. Oh,
right,
man.
Right now it is variable from week to week.
That's it. That's a song you play at the end of the episode, Joe, because what Tim just said reminded me of an old game that not many people talked about at four time. It was on the Wii, and it was called Sports Ball. And if you can find it later, the jingle for that game, like the intro theme song, is probably one of the best damn theme songs I've ever heard in my life. It's so goofy. But just pointing that out, because now I want that to be.
I have no clue what that song is. I'll have to look it up.
You'll find it. Trust me. It's out there and it's glorious.
Is it as good as Naked Men's Volleyball League song?
I'm not going to lie to you. To me, it is because it had the same impact that the theme song to that game had, where it was like you boot the game up not expecting that kind of theme song, but then you get that kind of theme song and you are so grateful for it. It's worth it. I'm telling you, I'm like, wow, I had no idea such a thing existed on the internet, or at least on the Wii. I'm like, yeah, it did. And not many people played it. Like, I only found out about it because my friend Matt found it first. And he was like, you got to try this game. I found about it on Reddit. And yeah, once again, Reddit had the news. So I think you'll like it.
What's this called again? Let me write this down.
Sports ball.
Okay, awesome. I thought you guys were kidding. That's awesome.
I'm looking serious. This up.
Check it out.
Was for the Wii U, allegedly.
All around.
I was on the Wii U.
That takes me back.
Yes. Wii U. Sports ball for the Wii U.
Yeah, it's Joust, except you're trying to make a basket, it looks like.
Yeah, the game is actually fun, but it's not complicated. But again, at the same time, it's all about that theme song.
Yeah.
So what you playing, Purnell? I hear you clicking away over there.
I'm pretty sure you already know. If you took a shot in the dark at the game I'm reviewing this week, you could probably guess and get it right in one.
Is it the first game that that you're going to talk about?
Yes, it is. Nice. I told you.
You're addicted, aren't you?
Well, let's not go nuts here. Nothing addicts. Nothing makes me addicted anymore. I'm a resilient gamer. But it is a really good game. So that's what there is to that. You're like, damn, that was anticlimactic.
It was. Like, no, it really was. I was hoping for more there. Tim, do you have anything on your end? How was your week?
You didn't even ask me how my week was. You asked him twice.
Wow.
You didn't ask me that.
Chris, how are you doing?
Chris.
It was.
Good.
And.
I don't know where we're going. Should it's we just awesome. Do reviews?
I guess.
I don't know. You want to hear about my kid's tooth falling out?
Yes.
I want to hear about the tooth, and I want to hear about, what was that, orange belt? Did I have that right? Didn't your kid get a
crossbow? Oh, yes. He got I forgot that happened.
I knew
he
didn't dream that. It was like was 2 weeks ago.
That was 2 weeks ago. Yes. Nice. So he's been taking karate for a few months, so he got his first official like baby belt.
Oh, awesome. Karate, which is the cool. Orange belt the first one? I didn't even know.
Yeah. Well, it's like cool. They break it down, so like, because he's a little kid, it's orange, right, but it's an orange stripe down the middle of it. So they're not giving kids real orange and like real adult belts, but they have to have some kind of sense of progression. Yeah, you should not give someone under 16 a black belt. It's irresponsible.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Wait, hold on. You can't give him a belt because it's irresponsible?
No, you shouldn't. Give them. You should not confer like the rank of black belt to a child because it is irresponsible.
Because like just do the level of aggression or like potential for harm that it takes to get it.
You are empowering them in a certain way that is not accurate to their level. Because
a kid walking around, I'm a black belt. Step back. Like exactly. I'm like 12 feet tall. Sit your ass down, child.
There's a degree, you know, when you are getting it from a proper school that there is a degree of responsibility that, you know, comes with that rank.
Well, I mean, you saw Three Ninjas kick back, right? I mean, he should be okay.
That was a movie that was fantasy, Purnell.
No, that was a documentary about three freaking California kids who had the right stuff and a mentor who knew the way and showed them how to be.
Don't ruin this for Purnell. Let him have this.
One of them had a Game Gear that could tell the future.
Yeah, anyway, I get this is like there's like a couple, one in particular, martial arts schools in Buffalo that is I once heard referred to as McMartial Arts. It's just like very commercialized for suburban families. And just like when somebody is like, oh, yeah, I got a black belt from there. I'm like, oh, did you? Like, I'm not like saying that the people teaching that Taekwondo like don't know their shit, but they just kind of like they have a system for making money, not for.
Right.
You are saying that it was called Mick Martial Arts, though, which is just fantastic.
It's just like not all martial arts schools are created equal.
Because congratulations. Here's your yellow belt and a Happy Meal.
Yeah. Some are just trying to make money off of you.
The bottom line is your kid could kick our asses at this point.
No,
right?
No, not at all. No, not even close.
Me, definitely.
He's got a yellow belt and he's short enough to kick me in the testicles. I think he could kick my ass.
He could just trip me. I start crying. It's over. He'll be like, "That's what Dad. She gave up already."
He would feel so sad. he would be more upset that he hurt you than anything. But yes, he did get his belt a couple weeks ago. But
well, hell yeah!
On Friday, I got him his COVID booster shot. Because little kids can get a third shot now. So yeah, I was like, sign him up, get a shot, take it.
Hell yeah!
And I'm
still waiting for number four.
So Saturday, my long weekend, I guess, well, it hadn't really begun at that point, but at 5:30 in the morning, like my wife is just taken off from work. He comes out of his room screaming, "My armor!" So I'm like, holy crap. Go take a pee and then come lay down. Come on, man. But then at like 6 a.m., he's like, I'm getting out of bed. I'm done. I'm like, okay, fine. You know, get him some medicine, get him some juice, get him a movie to watch, get him a bagel, make him comfy. And then like noon, I was like, oh, right. You didn't brush your teeth. So he goes to brush his teeth and then like knocks one of his front teeth ajar, which has probably already been wiggly. And this is where the story becomes a horror story. So then like his you know, tooth is loose and wiggling and like hanging there, and he's freaking out because he has like a headache and a fever from the freaking COVID shot. And now one of his teeth is coming out and like there's, he bled a bit because he knocked it ajar so fiercely. He's like, I don't want this tooth to come out of my head. I'm just like, oh my God, dude, I don't want to take more medicine. I don't want any noise. You just be quiet. Turn the sound off. I'm like, okay.
Oh, and then God.
He's like, I'm going to go lay down in my room. I'm like, thank God. Bye.
this is all so relatable.
Yeah. And then I took a slight nap. And then after I woke up, he was like, Dad, look at my tooth. And now he's menacing me with this dangly tooth. And now like twisting it around and flipping around. I'm like,
now that's awesome.
Saying like, how the fuck is this not coming out of your fucking mouth?
God.
What is going on? And it just like, it was a good 2 hours of horror of that. And then finally, like it popped out and I was like, oh, thank God. And then at that point, like the after effects had washed over him and like his tooth was out and everything was great again. But he was like a mess that day. And then we had to run all these fucking errands and I had to mow the lawn on Sunday. So then I was like, and then I watched until 1 a.m. on Monday, which is well past my bedtime. And then,
I mean, you should have taken him to the store with you while the tooth was like that. Cause then you could have like been like in line, man, this line's taking forever. He just stands in there, dangles his tooth, and I'm like, get out of the way. Ew, kid, get away from me. Go up there. He helped you cut. That would have been great.
I have good line jumper skills.
Yeah. Gotta put that to use. Like, yeah, it grossed you out, but it'll also gross out other people.
So it ended up being a weirdly exhausting weekend, but you know, it was eventful and fun. And yeah, here we are.
Nice. Chris, what about you? How was your weekend? Oh, you're on the spot.
I can remember it.
That's how I feel most days.
When
people ask, like most Mondays when people are like, what'd you do this weekend? I'm like,
that was a weekend.
You're like, I'm a parent.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah.
Better
that's
than
what
a parent.
I parented for 48 hours.
Yeah. That's the thing though, is I'm not a parent. So, and I don't do anything that would cause like the kind of memory loss that I have. So it's like, yeah, that's, you know, I played a lot of video games, I think.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fun weekend to me. Shit.
You are in.
Don't argue.
That sounds like a great weekend to me.
What about you, Brooke?
Drop it, bitch!
I just ate a bunch of food. Just slept. Also, I played both Arcade Spirits games and Blown Fly. This is the first time I've done three games for a week.
Sweet. Technically, it's so just fun. Two. You played the one just for the hell of it.
Yeah, Joe was like, yo, do you want to do the new Arcade Spirits game? And I was like, yes and no. I do want to do it, but I don't want to do it because I really wanted to play the first game. That's in my backlog. And he was like, boom, here's a magical code for both games.
I mean, you're recreationally hitting Purnell and Chris levels.
Yeah, do not let him wreck your flow. Just because you're not reviewing doesn't mean it doesn't count that you played through it.
Y'all
enjoyed yourself.
I won't do like the intro for the first game. I'll do the intro for the second one. I just on the official level.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
Should we get to those? Is this Brooke's way of hinting at let's get to the goddamn reviews?
I mean, I'm the one who brought up the Karate Kid stuff, so I'm in.
Well, now I want to know which one was better, because she can't talk about the first one on the episodes, and I want to know which one was the better game.
She's going to talk about the first one.
You guys are going to be really sad that I'm talking about both games, because it's going to take up the whole show. It's going to be awesome.
Well, I'm for it. Anyway, let's get started. First game to talk about is Arcade Spirits, the new Challengers, developed by Fiction Factory Games, published by P-Cube, released May 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Arcade Spirits, the new Challengers is the follow-up to 2019's Arcade Spirits, a visual novel of love in pixels, in which you seek friendship and romance while working in an arcade. Now the tables are turned as you seek friendship and romance while playing in an arcade. Brooke, you wanted to talk about both games, so how do you want to handle this? Take it away.
You know what? Well, you know I've got it all written out in front of me because I'm a huge dork. And it's a good thing I did, because this game is really good, and this blurb that you just read, like, they're underselling themselves. So Brooke's just gonna, she's gonna take over from here. All right. Once again, super congested. Bear with me, everybody. If you've played the prequel game to this game, Arcade Spirits proper, you'll already know that Arcade Spirits is an insanely customizable, super personalized visual novel with possible romance options that is absolutely, honestly, this, I'm not even kidding, it's absolutely unmatched quality-wise within the genre of visual novel games. If you have not played Arcade Spirits, not to worry, I'll catch you up. Arcade Spirits is an insanely customizable, super personalized... Okay, I'm not going to do that bit. I'm going to cut that one short. All right, so...
That's a good bit.
It's a good bit. I appreciate it.
I have more written out, but I'm going to share. I'm going to save you guys this time. Okay, so I play a lot of visual novels. We all know this. If you're new to VizNovs, they're just games that are basically a choose-your-own-adventure novel, but with you as the main character. Wow! Also, focusing on the visual part of the term visual novel, there are usually pictures to look at, background illustrations, each scene set the scene, character portraits that will usually change expressions and little stuff depending on what's going on in the scene and the dialogue. Sometimes these are voiced characters, sometimes they're not, sometimes they're semi-voiced. This is a semi-voiced game, and if you don't like voice actors reading to you, you can always turn those voices off. Now, I've reviewed a few visual novels for the show in the past, and one thing I always say when I'm giving them our official rating at the end is this is a buy it if you like visual novels. This is a try it if you like visual novels, because they're a specific type of game. They're basically like a book game. So why am I over here defining the term visual novel when I've never told non-visual novel gamers to try it or buy it before on the show? Well, that's because for the first time on the show, maybe the first time ever, I'm coming out of playing a BizKnob, ready to recommend this game to even folks who have never tried a visual novel before. It's just a really good choose-your-own-adventure anime, you guys. This is like watching a really good anime and getting to call some of the shots. It's dope. And it's got a lot more content, you know, hour, like price to hours in mini 12-episode anime. Anyway, now this is technically a sequel set in the same universe as the OG Arcade Spirits, but what's great about Arcade Spirits, the new challengers, is the standalone game. You don't have to play the original Arcade Spirits at all to enjoy this game. However, if you think you might like either of these games, I would really strongly recommend starting with Arcade Spirits proper, because it's an awesome game, and there are a fair amount of perks to starting with the first one, and I'm really glad I played both in order, even though it took a huge chunk out of my weekend. So, question, who here has played the Dragon Age games? I think I asked y'all this before, but I can't remember.
I have, yes.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm sure there are other games that do this, but you know how when you play Dragon Age Origins, then you go into Dragon Age 2, or you go from Dragon Age 2 to Inquisition, you start the game, and it's like, hey, do you want to import all your data from all the choices you made?
Yes.
So this game is doing that, for sure. It's a lot like the jump from Origins to Dragon Age 2. You're not playing the same character, you're just in the same world as your previous game. And the events of which occurred a few years ago, all the choices you made in that game have helped create the world you're in now. If you don't choose to import the data, or you just don't have any to import, no problem. The game will take care of the rest for you and, of course, fill in those blanks. You just might miss some really fun Easter eggs or plot reveals or stuff that might give you a little thrill if you played the first game. Like it did for me. I got some real thrills out of playing them in order.
Nice.
So in the original Arcade Spirits. Oh,
I think it cut out for a second there.
I think you're right. Let's take it from the top. So
Arcade Spirits.
Thank you, dude. Well, let's talk about some of the choices you make in the original game. In addition to your name, appearance, and all the dialogue and social choices you're making throughout the story to drive it, if you don't want spoilers for the first Arcade Spirits at all, please plug your ears for the next full minute starting now. And yes, I timed what I'm about to say, so I'm serious. Okay, go. Deep in the plot of Arcade Spirits, the original, you get to open your own arcade, or not open an arcade and fade into depression nothingness as all your friends and loved ones give up on you, including yourself. It's totally up to you, not even kidding. You not only get to name your arcade, but you choose a business model for that arcade out of three possible business models. Each of the setups to choose from will open up meeting and interacting with different characters that are available. The business models are arcade plus family restaurant, barcade, or just straight up arcade with just the games. After you choose your business model for the arcade, you're going to branch further out and you're going to pick a business focus. Will you focus on live streaming, ticket redemption for prizes, or the third focus that I can't remember right now because I just picked streaming? These are not even the main story branches for this game. It is pretty nuts. This is just like when the game really starts to get going as far as like just the plot map we're looking at here. Okay, so that's been about a minute. I've gone into all this detail of just these six branching story directions. because very few visual novels are this interactive and change the story so much depending on what choices you make. Like, normally it doesn't really matter and you're just doing a recommended route order to get the whole plot. I think I could easily play this game through 10 times and still have content to explore, and I can't really say that about any visual novels that I can think of, and I played a lot of them. It's just, like, insane. I looked up some possibilities earlier. I got chills. I'm thinking of restarting the whole series before bed tonight. But let's talk about the type of dialogue choices for just a little bit. I'm going to reference some BioWare stuff again. Each time you're making a choice, you're presented with dialogue choices in a conversation. You're able to pick a type of response, and your responses will slowly build you up some personality stats. Later, many of the choices you can make will only be available if you have certain stats built up. The categories of the types of things you can say, and thus the type of person you slowly become over time, are as follows. Kind, quirky, steady, gutsy, or basic. And unless you turn this off, each choice will have a little symbol indicator so you always know the type of response you're choosing. Or you can be like me and go in blind and pick whatever you want to say and have it end up being a nice surprise what you end up being like. You can learn a lot about yourself this way. I've discovered with the help of this game that I'm a very basic person. Not proud. So, once again, we're doing kind of a, it's okay, you guys. It's okay. I'm glad, you know, it's better to know. It's better to find out now. So, yeah.
Could you be your best basic, at least?
You know, I think I was, but I'll let you know on my second playthrough how that worked out for me. Okay, so once again, we're kind of doing a light BioWare character, like, building a world-building thing. Arcade Spirits, The New Challengers, is built just like the first game, but even more. It's just like the first game on speed. It's even more personalized and customizable, like exponentially so. I don't want to go in too deep of the major, like, branching choices, because I want this to be a surprise for you, and this game was just released yesterday. But I will say, as we know from Joe's description, the theme of this game isn't running an arcade, it's being in one.
Yeah.
This game is about your journey. Your journey as a brand new character who's trying to assemble a badass esports team to take all the way to the Pro Tour for beloved MOBA game, Fist of Discomfort 2. And what's cool That's right, Fist of Discomfort 2. You've heard of it. It's the long-awaited sequel to Fist of Discomfort 1. It's a MOBA. And what's cool about this, well, it is a MOBA in the game, but it's represented by a mini-game in the visual novel that you will play cooperatively with the AI characters on your team. It's super congested. Let me take some water really quick. And at these times,
new challengers,
dude. And at these times, your team becomes like a party of characters you control. Even better still, there's nothing like this in the first game. Even better still, if you don't want to play the mini game, you can just turn that off too and just play it as a visual novel. They won't make you do it. But the mini game isn't hard. It's fun. If you can play Gwent, you can wipe the pro circuit floor with Fist of Discomfort 2. And it's basically rock, paper, scissors with, like, ninjas and seasons. It's pretty dope. Weird. So,
I can't get over the fucking name of it.
I love the name. I don't know why, but I thought of Aki when I saw that name. And the character I was comparing to Aki earlier is a pro Fist of Discomfort 2 player. So that worked out for me. But back to more of this custom content this game has to offer. In addition to designing yourself, your pronouns, your name appearance, you're also going to be designing another main character, your rival. Now, this was fun. This brings me back to some Pokemon Blue shit right here.
Later.
You'll design your rival's appearance. You choose their pronouns, their first and last name, their gamer tag. I picked Grimace for my rival. My gamer tag is Hamburglar, and my team is the Ball Pit, by the way. And you'll even choose whether you and your rival historically have a friendly rivalry full of lots of good natured teasing, or if you hate each other's guts and your rival's an ass. And either way you pick, you also then get to pick if this heated rivalry is heated by desire. Nothing's off the table here, folks. And your rival is only one of myriad possible love and friendship interests. We're almost done with the review, guys, I promise. You can choose almost anyone to flirt with in this game. You can choose the sexy, nerdy inventor lady with the glasses. You can choose the busty, combat-savvy gamer girl firecracker who cusses a lot. You can choose the knowledgeable yet standoffish, bookish senpai. You can pick the amorous rogue who uses the king's English, says m'lady too much, and steals toys to give to children. Just don't pick the creepy broke guy who tells uncomfortable jokes and struggles with depression and anxiety, because that guy is my boyfriend. And let's take a look. I have a picture of him I'm going to bring up now in the Twitch chat. Let's look at my boyfriend, you guys.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Wait,
did that work?
I see it, yes.
All right. So that's him normally, and I was like, whatever, I don't care about this guy. I'm still in love with the guy from Arcade Spirits 1. But,
so, yeah, I'm using one of these pictures as the episode picture.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, so I'm about to drop the other one in here. This is when I fell in love. He was just thinking about how much he likes chicken nuggets. And he just, like, I love him so much, you guys. Okay, let's move on to the rating. In Damn. Addition.
Out of 5 chicken nuggets. How many chicken nuggets
would you rate? You guys. He's just thinking about it. Okay, so in addition to all the mechanical and content upgrades from Arcade Spirits to this new game, the new Challengers, aesthetically, it's also a huge upgrade. The music for this game slaps. Aesthetically, it's just amazing. It's a nerdy vaporwave pink neon paradise. And I had to practice saying that, so I didn't, like, stutter in the middle of that. So you're welcome. One thing I want to mention here, just one, before I just give our official rating, which is obviously a buy it. Lots of visual novels with romance options boast that they offer a complete, super fun and engaging experience, even if you choose only to pursue friendship and you don't end up dating anybody. A lot of visual novels are like, hey, our story is so good. If you're not comfortable with the flirting, turn it off. You'll still have a good time. But that's never true. This game is probably the only game I've ever encountered where I think that is a legitimate claim. At the end of Arcade Spirits, I was like, my God, these crazy bastards have done it. The romance parts were cool, but this isn't like a super steamy game or anything, but it only added to the experience. It gave me kind of a nice, silly rom-com time on top of the story that the game let me control. Knowing what I know now about the quality and sheer content of the game, I can safely say the romance is not the main part of the story at all. It's completely accessible, like fun, unique, compelling experience, even if you take dating. Thank you. It'll be unique, even if you take dating and kissing and butt touching and stuff totally out of the equation. If this game sounds interesting at all, buy it. Buy it, even if you think it sounds good, you haven't played a Viz Nob before. And if you're a visual novel or a Tome game fan already, do not be like me before this weekend. Don't sleep on this game and miss out. You're going to fucking love this. And you're going to dip your toe in the visual novel pool. If you're going to do that, this is the warmest water that there is. This is the best game to enter.
Oh, why is it warm?
Don't think too hard about it. Probably something to do with nuggies. And before the review officially ends, we now have to look at my very first boyfriend from the original Arcade Spirits. Let's put that in the Twitch chat.
This is why you gotta watch it live, folks.
It's Teo. He's a DDR player. He's wonderful. Okay, review over.
All right, DDR players, I'm in.
Wow. He's so good, you guys. Look at that hat. All right.
His review was fantastic. Thank you, Brooke. Next game.
This is a fantastic game.
It sounds like it. I'm going to have to give this one a go. I'm not much of a visual novel guy, but you've won me over.
Uh-oh.
I only have access to the second game, though, so I can't play the first.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Can we not get it for you on Steam or something?
Oh, you Steam? That's weird.
We're going to figure this out for you, man. I you know, normally I want to keep Teo to myself, but for you, dude, I'm going to figure this out.
Well, we don't have Teo, but we have KO, the kangaroo, developed and published by
amazing.
Tate Multimedia.
I'm glad Tim has to follow that review up, because, woof, that was a good
one. Released May 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $29.99. Join KO, the feisty furball, as he embarks on an unforgettable quest to uncover the secrets surrounding the disappearance of his father. He'll traverse rich environments filled with hazards, puzzles, and foes. Each turn uncovers another clue, as well as revealing a secret world bubbling under the surface. Tim, tell us about your time with KO, the kangaroo.
Well, yeah, I learned like right before showtime that KO the Kangaroo was actually a series of video games. That there were KOs back in the early 2000s.
There was an old arcade game.
Well, there was a PlayStation 2 game. There were some GBA games. There were some games on PC. So I don't know. Maybe people have nostalgia and are like, "Oh wow, KO is coming back." And I was just like, "Oh wow, that was a game back then." Because, you know, in playing it, I'm just like, oh, this is one of those games that's being very much a deliberate throwbacky to that era of 3D platformers, which I don't know, people are weirdly nostalgic for. But I guess it's also, you know, bringing back a series that maybe people were a fan of at the time. I don't know. Not me. I kind of steered clear of most of those games because they ended up being, I don't know, just like a little bit generic feeling. you know, riding on the coattails of Mario 64 and eventually Banjo-Kazooie.
I mean, my love and nostalgia for KO the Kangaroo comes from, like, the original arcade KO. Like, my YMCA had a KO the Kangaroo machine that I used to play all the time. So.
KO had an arcade game?
Yeah.
That I never knew.
You sure that was KO the Kangaroo? That is not listed on the KO the Kangaroo Wikipedia page. Maybe it was a different game involving the Kangaroo, Joe.
Maybe.
Was it Kangaroo?
Now I want to find out what's going on. Might be Kangaroo Arcade. Yeah, Kangaroo Arcade. Son of a bitch. I thought it was KO the Kangaroo.
Yeah, no. By the way, typing just Kangaroo into Google does not get you the arcade game, but does get you Kangaroos. I should have known that before doing that. Anyways.
So my nostalgia is based on a game that is not the same. Son of a... Well, fuck me.
You just have nostalgia for kangaroos, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
Anyway, I mean, so yeah.
Baby ones are Joey's.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joey. This is
you watch Blossom close enough.
It is a modern-ish update of, an old 3D platformer series from the early 2000s, and KO the Kangaroo, parentheses 2022, feels like a platforming game from the early 2000s, and your mileage may vary on how much that is a thing you want to play in parentheses 2022. So KO the Kangaroo, his whole shtick is that he finds his dad's long-lost dad's cursed boxing gloves, so he's boxing. His name's KO?
Ow.
I get it.
Because he's a boxer. So, nice. you have your kind of animal mascot main character. You have there's multiple hubs as you kind of move through the game, which will each have like a couple levels jutting off of them. And you have to find runes, I think, is the MacGuffin thing. You got to find certain amount of to open gates to get you into new levels. Though I did not find them very strenuous to find, other than in like the hub worlds they drop you into, there will be like a few, and you usually have to find like a couple of them in order to unlock the first gate to get into the first level. When you're in the actual levels, like, they're pretty linear, and it puts the runes right in your main path. Like, there is other stuff that will be off to the side, but it's pretty easy to find them and progress through the game. That is not an arduous experience, but yeah. KO, he can jump, he can dubby jump. His neck extends weirdly when he's in water sometimes, to keep his head above water. The combat is just a pretty simple, like, you're just mashing on X and you'll build up a little bit of meter, and when it gets full, you can hit a different button to land a big heavy punch, and like the sound kind of goes boom and things slow down, and then you knock out punch some enemies. But that's about it. Like, there's nothing too crazy about the combat or the gameplay. There's also sections where he can hang by his ears and kind of go hand over hand, so he's stretchy in that way as well. But like, it's pretty unremarkable, just to kind of top to bottom. It is very much by the numbers. You go in, the world looks good. It looks nice and colorful. It does not look like half-assed by any means. It looks, you know, very rich and well-designed, visually. The levels themselves, like I said, they're pretty straightforward. They're pretty linear. There will be little things off to the side where you can find like health upgrades or more currency, which you can use to buy health upgrades, or extra lives. That didn't really come into play for me. I did not experience enough challenge to die enough to find out what would happen if I ran out of KO coins or what have you. Did not find too much of a variety to enemies, which went from like these frog guys where there's like, oh, there's some that run up and melee you and some that hit you from a distance, to like some purple apes where there's some that run up and melee you and then some that shoot at you from a distance. Pretty much within, I don't know, a couple minutes of playing this game, I was like, I bet you get some kind of elemental powers, and lo, you get elemental powers as you progress forward, and you can use those powers. They have some offensive utility in just making your big punch stronger, but they're mainly used to just kind of like clear obstacles in the way. Like, you get the fire ones right up front, and it's like, oh, you can use these to clear out webs and levels, and sometimes you have to get a little creative with putting fire on your boxing gloves. You only get like a limited number of uses of them, so wasn't really killing the old brain. But yeah, you'll go into a level, pretty linear, you find some stuff, you know, maybe buy some stuff, move on to the next level. It is voice acted. I don't know, the writing and the voice acting really didn't do anything for me in terms of the humor. I think KO himself sounds like a little bit weird, just with whatever accent or affectation the actor was going for. It's fine. But sometimes they can just talk a lot, and I'm just like, I found myself zoning out.
Just want to get to the gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, was okay, and it was fine. So everything's kind of like, yeah, okay. My biggest fucking problem with this game, is it's 2022, parentheses aside, and like, how do you make a game without an option for inverting camera controls? Like, what are you
seriously
fucking doing?
What the fuck, people?
I don't understand. And
that's a lot of passion behind that complaint.
It is. Well, because I am a person who needs my camera and my look inverted. And if I don't, on some level, like, on one end of the spectrum, I can find a game basically like barely playable. Like if it's first person, like, was it Cluster Truck? That has an invert option, but it doesn't work. And that for me, it's just like when you're doing first person platforming, it's like, forget it. With controlling a camera in a third person game, it's not as debilitating, but what I would find is that like gradually throughout a level, for like just doing a little bit of having to like adjust the camera a little bit and going a little bit the wrong way half the time, I'd be fucking a little bit motion sick by the end of a level, and I'd be like, I just don't want to play this anymore. I just don't understand, like,
yeah, I have an Elite controller with an inverted setting specifically for games like this that don't have the, like, why the fuck would you not have the option? How hard is it to add inverted camera controls?
I don't know, but it is something that is a necessity. Like, back, it's why I have trouble going back and playing games of the era this is harkening back to from time to time. It's like, I go back and I'm like, oh, the camera just feels all a mess. Like, I just can't stomach this. Like at the time, like I would just kind of go with it, but like after playing so many games over the years where it's like, yes, of course, it's the first thing I do, I go into the options and I invert the damn camera setting, like it is offensive. It is offensive to me. What are you doing, KO the Kangaroo? For what it is, I mean, my this is a game, like it is not lost on me that this game is mainly for fucking children. Which is, you know, that's fine. Not every game has to be for adults, but it feels mostly like, you know, something that kids would get into. Like, my kids seemed to enjoy it. He was not begging me to play more KO the Kangaroo. It is also K10, so I had to parental unlock it on the Xbox forum. Which, by the way, the Xbox has really nice parental controls.
Marsupial violence.
I also get a report every week as to what games he's played and how long he's played them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I don't really need to know because generally I'm in the room or in the vicinity. Like, I know what he's playing. But it's besides the point. Like, I'll just say, like, he wasn't like, I mean, he has a plethora of games at his disposal, and he's always finding new games to get into. And yeah, he's a very, like, I don't know, his gaming habits are besides the point. But yeah, KO the Kangaroo. I think it's hard to straight up deny it. I'm not personally going to be recommending to people to run out and play KO the Kangaroo. But I think it is of a certain quality that if you are very nostalgic for that particular era, that you will have an enjoyable time with it. It's not too long. If you are someone that needs your camera inverted, forget about it, but it may be worth a try for those, that, you know, want a really solid 3D platformer that just does really not much exciting or new or, you know, innovative or unique.
Works for me. I could agree with you. I think it's a fun, solid game, but it's not a world breaker or world changer. It doesn't do anything to stand out from the crowd. Yeah. But
there's no like one mechanic that's like, this is the reason to play KO. Like,
yeah. But if someone gifts it for you, like, I wouldn't turn it away. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to have an awful time, but yeah. It's just like, yeah. Yeah.
All right, it's not going to be quite a knockout, but.
Nice. Thank you. Well done. Well done.
I need an air horn on my phone. Air so horns. Bad.
Yes. I kind of like our fake air horns that we've developed.
Gotta have one.
All right. Well, Tim, that's it for you. It's Discord, so you could just leave whenever the hell you want.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I can do that in Skype as well, really.
True.
I'm going to linger, and then I'll leave.
All right. Next game to talk about is Blow and Fly. Phrasing tonight. Phrasing tonight. developed by Kudo and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released May 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Your owner's naughty son destroyed your aquarium, and now you're desperately in need of water. Use what little liquid is left on the floor to move around and retreat to a toilet bowl, which might save your life or flush you down into far more challenging realms, escaping which will require all of your agility and creativity. Brooke, what the hell's going on in Blow and Fly?
Well, I'm just learning that you're from an aquarium in this game, which, you know, I gotta start reading these before I hear you do them live.
this seems like something that would have been put out on, like, the DSi shop to make you, like, blow into the microphone on the DS.
It's actually not, but, like, now I wish it was, now that you're throwing that out there. Joe, I keep meaning to ask you this when we're not live, but am I allowed to lead with the price for this game?
Yeah, it's $5. I say the price in the description, so...
Well, I immediately
Joe doesn't give a fuck what we do.
I really don't. I take a nap half the time.
I knew there was something I liked about this place.
Yeah.
All right. So Blow and Fly is actually 20% off. It's $4 in the Switch store right now. I think it is on another platform as well, but don't quote me on that. So for $4 on sale now, I can't say enough good shit about this game. I've definitely given $4 games a deny it before on the show, so it does happen. This is a ridiculous value. I don't have a ton to say about what this game is about because it's pretty straightforward. You know, you're a blowfish, which usually are found in the water, I think, but not you. Not this time.
That's correct. Good guess.
Tim, I was like, I really hope Tim hears this one. So you're stuck on land with nothing but the power to blow. Blowing yourself around the level, that is, to get to the next level. When you want to move around, you're going to put your mouth on the ground. Stay with me here. You're going to angle your tail to the sky in the direction that you want to fly. It's a like a physics platformer. I lost my place. Dang it.
Blow and fly.
Okay, so when you want to move around, you're going to put your mouth on the ground, angle your tail to the sky in the direction you want to start flying, and then use the power of your own blowing and your own momentum to blow on the ground. So stay with me here. You'll be wanting to play this game face down, ass up, as it were. This is just the way we like to play it. What can I say? I was like, if Tim just hears this one part, I can die. Okay. So your goal is to use your incredible blowing abilities to ricochet around each level, avoiding instant death traps until you reach the goal. In your case, a nice toilet that you can land in that will take you back to the sea or the river or wherever it is blowfish come from. I don't have time to be looking up biomes and shit. You don't just blow around. You're also going to kind of like control where you land, environmental factors, etc. There's a lot going on here. It's not just picking a direction. It's also handling all the motion stuff that comes after that. I know this sounds weird, but I really am reading my notes out loud. I looked up how to talk about this earlier, and I'm still not really sure what to say without just saying something like, hey, momentum and friction are things that exist, and they need to be manipulated if you're trying to, I don't know, fly into the toilet to save your life. So the design of this game, from everything from the backgrounds, to the animations, to the music, to the style of the secret stuff you can unlock and find, little secret rooms, little mini games and stuff, it's all done with such style, such a sense of humor. The music is dope, it's groovy, it's funky, it's definitely inspired by Toe Jam and Earl, and I am never mad about that. Honestly, this is the third physics platformer type game I reviewed in 3 weeks for the show, and this is by far and away the best of the bunch, and my favorite physics-y type game I've ever played. This game's instantly addicting, and that's even for someone like me who thought this would be like Angry Birds, and I don't like Angry Birds or games like Angry Birds. I usually find those games boring, and I'm riveted playing this. This is a really good time sink right here.
Can you use the microphone to blow into?
Wait, what?
Can you use the mic on the Switch to blow into?
Oh, you said canned. I thought you were like, no. And you can use the microphone.
No, I'm wondering, can you? Like, do they have that ability in the game? Because I know you covered it on the Switch. Clearly, they don't have that on Xbox. They might have it on... Tim brought up that point that it sounds like something you would have played on the DSi to blow into, and now I just want to know if you can, because I'll buy it on the Switch.
It does have a built-in microphone.
I'm not going to say that you can't. I will say that if you can do that, they didn't teach me to do it, and I didn't think of it, and I'm feeling some real regrets right now for not trying it. So.
It doesn't have a built-in mic. Of course you can't blow on it. Sorry.
But yeah, I would call this a buy it. I'm really glad I played this game. It was a new experience for me, but just familiar enough to really bite me. So I actually played it a bunch the day I got it. And it made me really nostalgic for games I loved as a kid, like Super Mario World, just in the way the game is designed, all the special little touches and different environments and worlds that it has in it as you progress through the game. It may be cheap, but I really recommend this little game, and I think it's actually a really good value for the price. I think it exceeds expectations there. I know it's on Steam. I played it on Switch, and it works beautifully there. So if you're concerned about whether it's optimized well for that console, it's very smooth. I have finally in my notes, Brooke recommend game good.
Plain and simple.
So many your mom jokes fly through my head during that review.
I'm going to send you the text of my review.
Just write them all in, like you're a teacher just correcting the paper, like cross out, put your mom here.
Yeah, absolutely. Just it's just like from the second where it was like, it can just, you know, be on the ground and blow. I'm like, just like your mom, do this, just like your mom, do God, this right into the toilet, just like your mom.
I'm so disappointed in myself. Dude, I'm gonna maybe regret doing this right now, but I'm gonna go ahead and give you blanket permission to please interrupt future reviews to tell your mom jokes. This is just...
Thank you.
Anytime, man.
I always hesitate when I don't know. You never know if somebody's mom's alive.
And
all you need to do is mess it up once to be very careful about how you do that future in your life. Right. And I messed up once. To a friend whose mom I knew wasn't with us, I made the joke, and I'm like, I am so sorry. She's like, it's fine, but
careful.
Anyways.
Well, yeah. Just blanket permission for the future. Would love
Very
it.
Very well. Thank you. Nice. Appreciate it. More than you know, probably.
I know I'm going to regret this, but no takes backsies. Yeah. You guys know what I mean.
Yeah, we get you. So are you going to stick around too, or did you need to head out?
I should probably head out with Tim, but next week I can stay. I'm going to regret saying this too. I can stay as long as we're gone next week. So I'm
looking forward to that. 4-hour show next week.
Pernell and Tim are like, fuck you, Brooke. I'm going to work my air horn, dude. I'm so happy.
Yeah, and I'll be back on Thursday night because
Jacob's gone.
Yeah, I need to pull that show up out of the gutter. So we'll do that.
You're going to hang out with Aki.
I have a good review coming Thursday night. Card Shark. I'm excited to talk about.
Cool.
Hoping I'm not tipping my hand on that too much. But,
One more airborne. Dude, that's awesome. I'm gonna join the Twitch chat for the Thursday show. So
cool. If you want, just join the Discord chat too, if you want.
Fuck it. I don't know about that. Maybe.
Just pop in during the middle and be like, hey, everyone, and leave. Randomly.
What have you that's unleashed? Awesome. Yeah, we can just, that's really the thing. Like, we could always pop out of Skype, but if we weren't on the call, we couldn't necessarily pop into it.
Yeah. Now
we
can just pop in when the show is happening. Now it's a free for all.
There might be
do whatever the hell you want.
Some parties.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, well, next game to talk about is Soldiers, developed by Retroforge, published by Dear Villagers, released June 2nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. While out fighting for the glory of their kingdom, you and your fellow soldiers are whisked away to Terra Gaia, a mystical land on the fringes of the afterlife. Your task is to locate the Guardian and move on to the next world. The hitch, you and your compatriots never actually died. Pernell, what's going on in this one?
All right, so the way this game works is at the very beginning of the game, after the introductory cinema is concluded, you have to choose one of three classes. You choose between the scout, a ranger, and a mage. Now, if you're like me and you watched all the trailers for this game and you read the name of the title being Soldiers, you might have assumed that you'd be switching through these different classes as you play the game. That is not the case. So make your choice count. I did not do that. But I'm okay with the game. Just I wanted to point that out to people because once I realized that I wasn't changing classes midway through the game, I just kind of had to just suck it up and keep going. So you choose one of three characters, and then immediately after that, they throw you into the main game's world. And you are tasked with the task that Joe mentioned at the beginning of the game's description. And this task takes place in an interconnected world that involves platforming and adventure. I am not going to say the other words.
It's Metroidvania.
God, fuck that word. So.
Oh, now I get it.
So as you're running around.
Metroidvanias are always unique.
Well, my problem with them sometimes, I feel like there is sometimes it's misused, but I don't want to go on. This is a review for a game that I actually like, and I want to trash it by me rang it on Metroidvania. So as you're running around the game, you are pretty much tasked with basically going on about exploring the different areas to fulfill narrative missions as the game requests. So you might be trying to, like, early on, like, you gotta get through a cave, find your way out. But while you're there, you might also locate a bunch of soldiers that got kidnapped by monsters in the cave. That's an optional part, mind you, and you get a reward if you succeed, but the other part you have to do. So you do get, like, submissions as you progress through the game. And you're just progressing from area to area with the occasional going back to access things you can get to now that you have new abilities. Now, the way the game plays itself with the normal character flow, at least for the scout, because I didn't use the mage or the ranger, because again, I didn't realize you didn't change characters as you played the game. You have a light attack and you have a heavy attack. Those things can be used to form combo attacks and the like to do damage to enemies. And you can also block, but your blocking has a stamina gauge, so if you overblock, you will get not so much dazed, but you'll be unable to block for a duration, leaving yourself way vulnerable to getting your ass handed to you. So essentially, those are your primary abilities for attack. Though, as you play through the game, you will get access to new, like, special abilities that can use an MP gauge. So not so much that you'll be using them, like, you'll be depending on them heavily, but they'll just be a variation or an option for you to, you know, shuffle your combat around. And I can't speak for everybody because I chose hard mode like a sucker, but this game is pretty hard. You will die a lot, but fortunately, at least the game is fairly forgiving as far as, like, how it puts you back into the action, usually by way of a, like, starting at a checkpoint or a save statue, and not so much of a penalty for death. It's just, okay, well, go back and you basically lose a small bit of progress and get back to it. So even like I said, I'm playing on the hardest difficulty in the game.
Are you playing it now?
Well, I have it on pause while I'm talking to you, but yes, I am playing it right now.
Is the music playing? Because I think I hear it in the background.
You can. That's amazing because it's down. My speaker is down to 2 out of like of 99. So
I thought I heard it in the background. I don't know. Maybe not.
You have really good ears if you heard it at a volume.
No, that's just 2. A really good mic if we could hear it.
Oh, that is true. That is very true. So as far as like exploration goes, like as far as exploring the map, abilities come in a few forms, and upgrades rather come in a few forms. Weaponry and your shield, like your sword and your shield, can be upgraded by way of finding minerals hidden throughout the maps and then take them to a blacksmith in the main town area when you eventually get there. You can spend money plus the amount of resources required to upgrade your weapon. And it essentially just like gives it more attack power. But for every 2 or 3 upgrades, it'll kind of evolve into a new weapon. So yeah, basically, like, it's not like, complicated like how, like, say, how Dark Souls was, because I know they mentioned souls like in a lot of descriptions. So it's not like that where you can like, hey, this is a sword and it can branch into 1 of 2 other swords. No, it's one sword. It's going to become 1 other sword. And that's all there is to it. It takes all the guesswork out of it. Same for your shield. There is an equipment slot, but annoyingly, God, really annoyingly, there's only one. So you get a bunch of different stuff, but you only have 1 accessory slot to use.
Fucking
so
yeah!
I came across the item early on that gave me plus 5% to gold, and I didn't want to use anything else because I need money to buy things. So I was like, well, I want the gold buff.
Speaking of needing money, Raider Biz just subbed. Thank you so much, Raider Biz. Always good to have you here.
Holding on to that. How long were you holding on to that? There's no way he just did.
Just a minute. Literally, it just happened.
That's wild.
Yeah. The timing was wonderful.
So. Give me a sound bitch for that. I just gave you that one.
thank you again, Raider Biz. You are awesome.
In addition to the accessory slot, there's also the traditional get four items, and you get a health upgrade by collecting four of that object. And then lastly, there's a general, like a key item slot that you can use for like special items for like as you're exploring the map or whatever. Now, the puzzly items, though, and this is going to be the last bit of like random dialogue I got about like general stuff in the game. So the exploration elements that change the game up as you play are threefold. There are sub weapons that you can acquire, such as like a dagger or a bomb or whatever. And once you find the sub weapon, you have it in your inventory. And unlike a lot of other games where you have like, say, bombs, right? And it's like, I pick up an item. Oh boy, one more bomb or two more bombs. Instead, this game does something where it's something called an ammo shard, where you have a max amount you can carry, and each sub weapon uses a specific amount of ammo shards per use. So like a bomb might require 5 ammo shards per bomb, whereas a dagger might take 1 ammo shard. So you can throw more daggers than you can bombs per set of ammo blocks or whatever. And they become items you can get from like small treasure chests or purchasable from vendors or what have you. The second thing is elemental orbs, because just like in Tim's review for Cal the Kangaroo, this game leans heavily into elemental properties. Each orb you find in the game, of which there are 5, bestows a different elemental stat towards your character. Now, aside from having puzzly elements to like basically give you a new ability for like exploring the map, it also gives you strengths and weaknesses, which I actually kind of like. So, for example, if you put on the fire orb, you become like resistant to fire by like 10%, but you become weak to water by 40%. So they intentionally made you weaker than you are stronger. Like, they make you weaker to your weakness than strong against your strength, because they want you to really focus on not just like running around using a random weapon at will. Because sometimes you will hit enemies, they'll absorb your damage too. So you need to be careful of that. Now, thankfully, switching is as simple as clicking the right thumbstick to the new orb and just jumping to it. And lastly, you'll find typical like world exploration items like the obligatory wall jumping mechanic and stuff like that once you find the item that lets you do it. So you'll be exploring a lot, finding items, looking for new things, finding secret items, and upgrades, fulfilling side quests, the like. Now, overall, this game, I think, is a lot of fun. I wish you got upgrades quicker, because the areas you explore in this game are huge. I'm not even exaggerating when I say that the levels in this game are massive as for a game like this. Metroid can learn a few things from this game, at least as far as the size of the areas go. Metroid is better when it comes to like doling out the upgrades, though. Oh, one thing I got to mention, I totally forgot. Mastery points. Crap. Okay. Every time you level up, because there's an experience system in the game, you'll get stat increases, including like hit points, your attack and your defense stat or whatever, or your stamina gauge. But you'll also get mastery points, which goes towards upgrading a skill tree. The skill tree isn't extremely complicated or anything. Different skills unlock at different levels. Like, I had enough mastery points for a few points where I was like, I don't like the things that are available to me right now. So rather than spend them, I'm just going to hoard them until the new things unlock and see if I'd rather just go over there instead. So, like, you're not going to be berated with choices. You're just going to be like, well, either you use them or you don't. But it, nevertheless, it's still there. It's kind of nice to have some of the upgrades, like, you know, like a perfect counter and stuff like that for my scout character. Now, back to the other point. Game is very large. Areas are massive. You're going to die a lot. Enemies, sprites and all are very awesome, and there's a lot of diverse monsters in the game. The music is really good. The graphics are freaking sweet.
It's a really good-looking game.
Yes, it is. I love the look of this game, and it's a large part of what makes exploring so fun. It feels like a throwback that isn't, because I can't think of too many 2D platformers back in the day that had a graphical style like this, but I feel like I have seen them, if that makes any sense. Like, I can't think of any, but it feels like I've seen it, and I love that this makes me feel that way. I enjoy seeing new things in this game. I enjoy finding new areas to explore, because they all look freaking godly. And whoever designed the art for this game deserves freaking kudos for that. That is a large appeal to this game in and of itself. I'm not going to keep rambling about it. I'm just going to say that in the end of the day, this game, I think it's a fantastic title. I only wish there's only a few complaints I have about it, and they're minor, really minor.
Yeah, I agree with you on the whole accessory thing. Like, if I have 10 rings, why can I only wear one? I have 10 fingers. Yeah, I could wear more than one necklace around my neck. Let me wear three of them. Yeah, sure, they might clash a bit and look weird, but...
Because typically in games like this, they give you a minimum of two. That way you can at least kind of switch around, or if you have that one accessory that's like a staple you never want to get rid of, yeah, you can always shift the other one, but this is like, you only get one. Like, well, the inventory for that's kind of weak, because I'm never going to remove this greed amulet, because I like getting extra money. But that's just how I tend to be. But playing around with this, one thing I noticed that annoys me, but this is, it's probably a Purnell-only thing, is movement in this game is done by way of analog stick, because the cross pad is used for switching between like potion usage and like the sub weapons I mentioned earlier. But what ends up happening when I use the thumbstick on my Xbox is that I'll accidentally be pressing up to climb a ladder when I don't want to, or activate the dragon statue when I don't want to.
Crouching. Yep.
Yeah, and it drives me nuts. Especially, you were having that too. It's really bad when you're like in the middle of a brawl. You're trying to move. It's like, nope, duck. I'm like, ah, here I go. Get the fireball to the neck piece. It drives me crazy. And it happens also with ledge grabbing sometimes. Like, you're trying to move around to like avoid things in a room that's like filled with like totem poles, for example. And these spiders are spitting webs at you. It's like, well, let me jump out the way. Oh, nope. Just grab the pillar. Now you're stuck in place when the spider spits at you. I know someone might be listening to this and going, well, that's user error, boy. And like, yeah, maybe it is. But the game was designed to work in this way, and you have to kind of just dance around it. But I wish there was like some way to say, I can confirm if I want to grab that ledge or not, versus automatically grabbing the ledge to lean off of it. Because I've taken a lot of hits unintentionally because I was jumping out of the way, and my guy's like, nope, grab that ledge. I'm like, shit, there it is.
The controls, there's just something about them that they need to be tuned up or tightened or something so that you're not doing accidental shit.
Exactly. But aside from that gripe, I've been having a blast with this game. It is definitely going to end up on my summer games challenge this summer. I am planning to beat this game with at least one or two of the characters, maybe two of them. It's a good time. I like it a lot. And I personally feel like at $20, given how much time you can put into this game, I think it's more than worth this money. As far as you've played, I'm assuming since you've been playing it, I'm going to guess you put on a lower difficulty. How do you feel about the difficulty on the setting you chose?
It's not so much the difficulty, I think, so far that I've played. It's more like the hit detection and the controls. Like, I feel like I'm facing one way attacking, but then I jump and I face the other way and attack. Or I'll feel like I'm hitting a spider, but I'm just near him, and it's not... there's just something I can't put my finger on that feels off about how the combat is in this game, and how... I mean, we already discussed the controls, how you're accidentally going up and down. It needs just some fine tuning overall, but I still think at $20, it's a really awesome game.
It is, like, it gets a solid buy it for me, like, no question at all. I was looking forward to this game when I saw the original trailer, and it does live up to what I was expecting. Just don't go in expecting to change your soldier character during the game, because you're choosing for life on that selection screen. I only wish I realized it sooner.
I could have sworn it warns you. It's like, this is what you're picking, so be sure it's what you want.
Don't get me wrong. It kind of does, like, the whole, like, are you sure? They don't say, like, this is permanent, but they do say, like, are you sure? And you're like, yes or no. But I just had this mindset that due to how the trailers were portraying everything and the title of the game and all that, I just had this impression that I'd be going to an eventual hub zone, or even like maybe on your desk, like, hey, do you want to use this guy or do you want to go back to another guy? Like, okay, yeah, I'll go to the other guy. But eventually, despite coming across the eventual hub zone hours into the game and all that, it just never happens. Like, well, shit, it's you and me, Scout, for life, or until the credits roll, and that's okay with me.
I gotta say, I am kind of surprised at the load times in the game as well. Like, I would load up, this is a pixel art game, and it would take like 20-30 seconds for an area to load up.
Oh, that's something worth mentioning. You said that. I didn't even think about it. It's not really a gripe because it doesn't affect the game as a whole. It's just a weird thing, which is so worth noting. Quote unquote Souls-like element is that when you come across a save space or save station, which lets you save the game, heal up, and also teleport between locations, it does that thing where it respawns monsters, but not all of them, just like the lower rank and file, not the some of the bigger monsters in the area. But every time you save your game and start moving again, there's like this slight moment where the game almost stops while it's kind of just, I guess, reconciling what's happening on the screen. And I'm like, why is it doing that? Why not just say, if it needs to do something, just like run through the game saved or do the dig-a-leak-a-leak, save game, and then start you running. But instead, you start moving, and then the game stops while it's doing something, and then you start moving, and then it's like nothing ever happened. But it seemed weird to me.
Yeah, there's just some general weirdness to the game, but I don't think it detracts from it overall. I think it's still worth it. And just to prove it to you, class selection, are you sure you want to choose this class? Remember, you can't change it while on your adventure. Yes or no?
It said that?
Yes.
Oh, he got you.
I am staring at the screen right now.
You know what? I don't care. I didn't read it. I was drunk. I wasn't drunk, but I'm going to say I was drunk because it makes me feel better about myself. Made me feel better about myself.
Sometimes it's less embarrassing if you say you're drunk.
Sometimes I didn't mean to pee myself, it just happened. But the game is still a fantastic title. Get down to business, enjoy yourself, play this game, you won't regret it. Just prepare to die a few times.
Cool. All right, next up is Wonder Boy Collection, published by Bliss Brain, released June 3rd on Switch and PS4 for $29.99. Carefully curated collection of essential Wonder Boy releases featuring four Sega Masterworks from the golden era of platformers. This quartet of acclaimed games brings something for everyone with their blend of classic platforming and action RPG gameplay. Whether you're a series fan or a newcomer looking to experience a gaming legend, Wonder Boy Collection brings the perfect Wonder Boy package. Chris, what's going on in this package?
What's going on in this package indeed?
I mean, we've had how many innuendos tonight? I had to figure, think of something.
I had to get my one in. In a manner of speaking.
Hey.
Okay, so, yeah, this is the Wonder Boy collection. So, Wonder Boy is a, if you're a retro enthusiast, which I sometimes maybe fancy myself to be, then you'll have likely run across this series at some point. It's kind of seen a little bit of a renaissance lately, which is kind of cool. We saw the Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap, get remastered and completely like reworked. I think we reviewed that one at some point. I just bought it, so I didn't review it. And then Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom, which was a 2018 title that's like the first brand new one in like, I think it was 24 years. And this is a... It's a series that has finally found its due. We rarely saw it in the West back in the day. I can certainly attest to that. Not at least in the way that we intended. So I'm going to give a little bit of a history lesson here because honestly, there's not too much to say otherwise. So the original Wonder Boy is you play Wonder Boy, the cave boy, who is having to run through levels, collect fruit, avoid enemies unless he can pick up the little stone axe weapon. Then he can throw the stone axe weapon. Sometimes he can pick up a skateboard and skateboard through some levels, you know, because skateboarding cavemen is a thing that has been visited in video games more than once. This is a delight. A very, very difficult game. And rather than get actual Wonder Boy, like it was an arcade game originally, but it came out on like all kinds of stuff. Like I think we got it on the Master System, maybe the Game Gear. But it came out on like a lot of European computers too, things like that. But the main reason we know it is because Hudson Soft just straight up took it, and they just completely changed it around to be about a guy who was very good at video games. Like, in the days before Twitch, there was a dude who was so good at video games, Takahashi-san, yes. Master Takahashi, he was so good at video games, especially shmups and shooters and stuff. Like, he had, like, he could hit, like, the shoot button, like, 32 times a second or something like that. Like, he had this world record for fast, you know, button speed and stuff like that back in, like, the 80s. Anyway, he was so celebrated that they took the game Wonder Boy and took out Wonder Boy, put in Takahashi-san, and then came out with that game and called it Adventure Island. And then we got it, and we had never heard of this guy with the with his fast thumbs. And so they changed the name to Master Higgins. And that's how we got the original Adventure Island. So that's what the original Wonder Boy is. It is Adventure Island with a cave boy. So there's a little bit of trivia for you. Yeah, that's a little bit of trivia for you. And you know, Hudson took that game and they made many, many sequels to it, all of which are great, but also hard. I've actually beaten Adventure Island on the NES, an actual NES, no save states or anything. And it took 3 days where I had to leave my NES on overnight because there's no way to continue in that game. And it was great. I actually loved it. Except, yeah, it was, you know... I have less hair now than when I did it because I pulled it all out. That's my excuse anyway. Okay, so that game is included on here. Now, whereas Adventure Island in the West kind of, you know, branched off into just different versions of Master Higgins and his adventure with cute, weird-eyed dinosaurs, the actual Wonder Boy license had an even more confusing journey. So... they decided to rework it a year later and come out with a game called Wonder Boy in Monster Land, which is also included on this collection. Also came out on, like, the Master System. I don't know where else it came out in the U.S., but I'm actually going to drop my own link because this game is bonkers, and you know it's bonkers because it has this cover to it. So I'm actually going to post that. Somebody said once that... the only way to logically explain Master System box art is that somebody at Nintendo made it.
What?
But yeah, it's this clownish looking boy wearing silver spandex with holding a sword and shield in exactly the opposite way you'd expect somebody to hold a sword and shield, punching out a knight, not stabbing him or anything. And he's just got this crazed look in his eyes. He's got like this golden afro and with a silver headband. It's just the most ridiculous box art.
That's some pretty incredible box art.
Yes, I love Master System box art. I love it so much. So that game is on here too. So it's like the same kind of thing, except that instead of skateboarding around and picking up fruit, now you've actually got a sword, although you start the game in your underwear, and your character doesn't have any kind of weapon, but he's holding out his hands as if he is holding a shield and sword, and so it just kind of looks like he's trying to feel his way through the stage, like he can't see. And the first... house that you go into where a little snake kind of priest, all the people in here are animals, which is a running theme. The NPCs are usually animal creatures, animal people. That's a running theme in the series. He tells you that your country's safety depends on you in a great typo. And then he gives you the sword and stuff, but you're still like wandering around in your underwear for like the longest time in this game. And it's just goofy as hell. It's very hard. You can't backtrack, but you can buy items. So it's one of those things where it's like every time... and enemies only... they'll spawn constantly, but they only drop gold once. So it's a side-scroller where, you know, you stab an enemy, get some gold, decide whether you're going to buy, like, a shield if you can afford it, or a spell, or a pair of boots. And then when you move on, you can't go back. So you're just kind of... it's a weirdly, like... you'd almost say like a roguelike in that sense, except that it doesn't like strip you and take you back to the beginning or whatever. But anyway, so that's the second game. So they decided to refine that and actually turn it into an exploration-based game. You know, Purnell, cover your ears because I'm about to say Metroidvania. And that game was called Wonder Boy in Monster World. Now that game I actually own on the Sega Genesis and have for over 20 years. Like, that's the game that most people, if they've played any Wonder Boy game, it's probably been that one. It's actually the fourth. Well, it's the fifth Monster Boy, even though it doesn't have a number. And the next game is called Monster World 4. This is actually the fifth game in the series because there were two different versions of Wonder Boy 3. Again, this game, this series is confusing. But Wonder Boy in Monster World is, let's say it's the fourth take on the property, and it's the third game that's on this collection. And in it, you play Shion, who is a blue-haired boy, and it's largely the same kind of gameplay. You go, you know, through dungeons with lots of doors. It's side-scrolly. It's very, it's a little bit like Zelda 2-ish, or yeah, Castlevania-ish is great too. By the way, I feel like if the games ever took a jab at Castlevania, it's in the fact that the very first boss in Wonder Boy and Monster Land is Death, which is usually the second to last boss in a Castlevania game. And it's Death the Grim Reaper. And you beat him up just to get like a better sword.
Oh god.
Anyways.
Anybody don't have a killing tool, it's gonna be Death.
Yeah, exactly. And like Wonder Boy in Monster World is like, I would consider that a great game. You talk to people, it's charming, you buy stuff, you sell stuff, you can grind enemies if you want. There's lots and lots of hidden content. There's interesting, huge dungeons with lots of, like I said, doors and like traps and, you know, things to do. It's a really, really cool game. And then Monster World 4 is the fourth game that they put on this. Again, this is the sixth game in the series. And it's not called Wonder Boy because it doesn't star a boy. It stars a girl. Her name is Asha. And she actually, her game got a remake recently. I think NN put it out. So she's gotten the new treatment as well. As well as the fact that, so this game never came out in the US originally. It was a 1994 Mega Drive game. But it did, like, in modern days, get a few different releases, such as, like, the Genesis Mini. It's on there. And interestingly, this collection actually acknowledges the fact that it was initially brought over by fan translators. Official games like this usually don't acknowledge fan translators, so I wanted to shout them out for that. Monster World 4... Again, it's the first game called Monster World, but it's still called 4, and it's the sixth game. It is a lot like Monster World, except that it's set in kind of a more Arabian Nights kind of setting, and Asha looks a little bit like a kind of a prototype for Shantae.
Nice.
And she's got a, you know, but she's also got the sword. But here's the cool thing is that, you know, I mentioned Zelda 2 before. In this game, you get the gosh darn downward thrust and upward thrust from Zelda 2, which is everybody's favorite move. So, I wouldn't say it's as hard as Zelda 2 either. All these games are like kind of like they're hard, but they're just on the cusp of like, you know, you don't really want to quit. It's like, it's not so hard that you can't do it. It's just like, and the other great thing is that this being a modern collection, you have not only save states that you can, I think you can hot button them. You can actually alter all the controls in this game, but you also get a rewind feature, which everybody loves. And a rewind and fast forward feature, in fact.
Nice.
And
fast forward?
Double
speed, or does it just know what you're going to do?
It says fast forward. Hang on, I'm going to use it right quick. It's pretty fast.
So it just like doubles the speed or speeds up the game?
Yeah.
Or does it autoplay for you?
No, it doesn't autoplay. It just speeds up the game.
All right.
Anyways. So yeah, these are really cool, bright, colorful games that have a lot of personality. One thing I like about Asha, and I think that's how you pronounce her name. It's A-S-H-A. But one of the things I really like about her in Monster World 4 is that she does a little dance while she's opening like treasure chests and stuff. And, you know, like there's like great cool stuff going on in the background, and it's like got some parallax to it. And just like the, you know, what you'd expect from like a really high quality Genesis kind of, you know, era game. And for people like me, it's like, I really love this style of game, even though there's not a whole lot of iconic side-scrolling adventure RPGs. There's enough of them that you're going to feel like some nostalgia playing these, which is really nice. And And yeah, like I said, it's got the modern amenities. It's got this weird thing too as well that you can choose the aspect ratio, which is normal, but you can, of course, you can stretch it out to the ends of a 16:9 screen like a monster. You can put it in 4:3, which is how it would kind of look on your TV, like a little weirdly stretched. Or you can put it at like, you know, a 1:1 pixel aspect ratio, which kind of makes all the pixels the same size. So it kind of looks, I think, the best. And then you can actually make it pixel perfect, which makes it about 1/10 of the screen right in the center, like a little tiny window into the game, which I think is hilarious because there's like, you're putting on like thick rim glasses. And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, this is perfect. I can see every pixel perfectly. I guess that's good for somebody. But yeah,
it's a $30 package. What do you think of it?
I think, yes, this is a great collection for that much. You know, that's $7.50 per game. Each one of them is easily worth more than that. There is a Wonder Boy Collection Anniversary Edition that you've already missed. It came out from Strictly Limited. Apparently, it's physical only, and it contains 21. Basically, the entire collection up to the point where they started making remakes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and it's every region, every like system is represented, and yeah, the only one that's available right now is like the £99 or euro rather, like collector's edition, which isn't even the expensive collector's edition. It's just the regular. So yeah, it, you know, versus that $100 set, this is definitely the best way to go because it gets you the best smattering of games. Although it completely skips Wonder Boy 3.
Dragon's Trap.
Both, yeah, we had the Dragon's Trap and also Monster Lair. They're two different games. And yeah, it skips both of those. But those can be had in the Nicholas, you know, released Wonder Boy 3 and the Dragon's Trap at least. So, you know, it's still obtainable and the collection doesn't really suffer for that. But yeah, Wonder Boy 3 is actually a really great game too, so I do recommend also picking that one up if you can. But yeah, I love this set, and it's worth picking up.
Cool. All right, next up is Floppy Knights, developed and published by Rose City Games, released May 24th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $19.99. Meet the Floppy Knights, tangible projections summoned from floppy disks. Tactics fuse with card game mechanics as Phoebe and Carlton, a brilliant young adventurer and inventor, and her robot arm bestie square off in turn-based battles. Select your knights, hone your deck, and execute your strategy for victory. Purnell, what's going on in Floppy Knights?
What's going on in Floppy Knights is this week's surprise of the week because I had never heard of this game. You mentioned it to me. I looked at it, and though the artwork was really awesome, and that is by the same guy who did the artwork for I already forgot the damn name of the game, Dicey Dungeons. I still was like, I'm not too sold on the actual visuals here, because then, you know, it's typical standing still images or whatever. And I was like, okay, I'll just take it. Why not? And what I came away with was, holy crap, this is something I didn't know I wanted, but I am so glad they took a chance on this gameplay style, because yes! The idea behind this game is that you are main character, which is kind of funny. She's a 16-year-old girl who is basically being, you know, her parents are trying to really convince her to get out of her house and finally get a job so she can buy her own house at the age of 16, because holy crap, what a world is that? Rather than get said job, she decides she wants to enter something called the Gadget Cup, which will give her a prize package that's of enough finances to buy a house, or at least a down payment on a house. They don't clarify. You just know she's going to get a home with that money. So that's pretty much what gets her start on her adventure. The first quest and then on is just like a bunch of scenarios that revolve around her either getting money to attend this event or keep the event from going down, and then other things that are just discovered later. But they just are just weird scenarios that get you set up to go into like different battle situations. And the battles are pretty cool. The idea is that the holographic magic floppy disk monsters are summoned from like a deck of cards, essentially. That's how the game represents the floppy disk. Initially, you have to summon what's considered a leader unit. The leader unit has its own like hit points, attack power, attack range, and movement range, just like all the other characters do. But once you summon that character, you then are able to summon any number of other characters that are drawn from your into your hand from a deck, from like a deck of card plate, which is like five cards per round, unless you get something, unless you draw more. Now, the idea here is that when you have your set of cards, you can't, once you summon a character down, which requires a certain number of energy to use, like to do any sort of action, you have to use the energy to summon the character down. But once you've done that, you can't just say, hey, I'm going to make you walk three spaces and then attack this guy. Instead, you have to actually have cards that will designate a movement. So it might be, hey, use this card to move a unit. It costs one energy, you use it on the characters on the board, and then they're able to move whatever movement range their character has available to them. Attacks are pretty much however you want them to be, in a sense. So, put some perspective on that. The first attack a character gets is free, and it's their basic attack. Whatever their attack power is, goes. But after that, if you want to do any more additional attacks, you have to use an attack card on them to do an attack. Now, there are basic attack cards that will just say, hey, use your attack function, and you'll do your base damage or whatever based on your range and attack power. But sometimes you'll get a card that will say something like poison plus two damage. So now your character's attack will have poison damage properties. So even though some monsters have poison properties, if you have the right card, anyone can poison an enemy, which is pretty awesome. It allows you to kind of get a little sneaky about who you want to do what as long as the cards are in your hand. Now once
quick,
the turn is
quick
over,
update, Carnage said that the artist for the game is Marlo Dobby or Dob, and it is a female, not a male. We're learning today.
I appreciate it. But I was right about it being the same person that did Dicey Dungeons, right?
I think so, yeah.
Good save. Where was that? Oh, yeah, got it. So at the end of a round, you end up discarding any cards you were unable to play during that round, and the enemy gets a chance to go. If the enemy kills one of your units, they just die. But if you play that, if you draw that card again from your deck, you're able to summon them anew as long as you have the energy to do it. However, if the enemies manage to kill your leader unit, game is over. Like, you lose the match. So even though your leader unit has like a really cool special ability that can help out throughout the board, and they can also attack on their own, you have to be careful about how you'll deploy them, because if they take the hits, if they die, it pretty much ruins your game. And I've had that mistake made a few times on my end where I got a little cocky with my leader unit. And as you play through the game, you'll unlock more cards that you can use to augment your deck, and you'll also unlock new leader units, which you can use to swap out the one you've currently got if you feel as though a mission calls for a different type of leader. Like, one of my favorite ones to this day is a leader that lets you actually heal every round. All of your characters heal one HP per turn, which on a level where you have to pretty much have a protection level, you have to survive for a certain number of turns, that's pretty freaking sweet. As you do each level, you get a situation where they'll give you like a general task to solve, like clear all the enemies out or protect this space for X number of turns or reach that specific point. And they'll also give you a bonus objective, which if you fulfill it, you'll get an additional reward, whether it be money or an extra card or whatever. Once you've done a level and you whether you get the objectives, the bonus objective or not, you'll be able to move through, you know, to the next level, each area having four of those levels. And then you move on to the next zone if you choose to do so, or you can go back and redo other levels to attempt to get their bonus objectives met. Between the levels, you can spend money to get additional cards. You can also go back to the home base area to take on a series of challenge stages where they will set you up with a preset condition and task you with fulfilling a goal, such as, I don't know, like, again, using this set of cards, kill every enemy in one turn, that sort of thing. And they come with their own rewards. The game is interesting in that, from what I could tell, at least, you can't grind. So if you're not careful, I'm going to guess you could probably find yourself in a position where you, like, you may be a little resource poor to buy certain cards, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they do it in a way where you actually can earn enough money to buy everything. I can't test it, because what I ended up doing was just buying stuff I thought was cool, and I never found myself resource poor. I just know, but you cannot actually grind for resources, so be careful with that. The game as a whole is a lot of fun. I'm not even sure if I was able to convey this in the way that you guys were like, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, Prina. But what I can say is that I found this game to be very charming. I had a lot of fun playing it. The concept of deploying units, but then using cars to make them do different things is something that I don't think I've seen in a game before. The closest probably being something like Children of Zodiacs, but in that game, the characters are already static. You don't summon them. They just have cars that determine what their actions are on the map. But this is something fairly new to me. The music is really cool, too. So, like, for the record, I've been bopping to, like, the one of the main battle themes on YouTube because either the developer or some really random fan put it up there to listen to, and I've been bopping to it at work. So, kudos to that. This game was a genuine surprise to me, and I am glad it exists because it is a lot of fun, and I want more people to play it. I only hope I did a decent enough job explaining it to get people at least interested in it, because they should be interested in it, especially if you like tactical RPGs, or even if you don't. Even if you just like feel like you've never played one before, I feel like this will be a good entry level for that, because it's fairly different from the norm anyway. So it's not like you have to have prior experience in the genre to experience what they're trying to get you to do here. Just come in and play.
Well, $20, your official verdict?
Oh, buy the hell out of it. It's probably worth $20.
Cool. All right, next up is Remote Life, developed by Next Game Level, published by Rattlesnake Games, released May 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $18.99. Remote Life is a 2D side-scrolling shoot-'em-up, a shmup. Experience a fast-paced action game with striking aesthetics. The gorgeously animated 3D graphics are full of creepy monsters, ominous backgrounds, and menacing bosses, featuring 16 different unique combat missions. Get ready to fly through a vibrant and haunting alien world. Chris, what's going on in Remote Life?
Oh boy, well, what isn't going on? I'm just kidding. that's like kind of like the way you would open something if you like didn't do your homework at all. But no, I've been playing this all day, so I definitely did.
Are you enjoying it?
Okay, so yeah, Remote Life is a side-scrolling shmup. Or shoot 'em up. I defer you to the game Beaker Reloaded. To you know, that's BEEKYR, the game starring bees. To give you the full tutorial of what a shmup is.
I do appreciate that this game's description does say a 2D side-scrolling shoot 'em up, and then in parentheses shmup.
Shmup. So yeah, it's great. It's a
teaching
very,
tool.
It's unpretentious. I like that. It knows that you might not know what that is, but you're reading about this anyway. Yeah, so it's a side-scrolling shmup, and it's got some of the trappings of like a normal 2D shmup. You know, something like your Gradius, your Darius, which is my favorite, your Androdunos 2. This one features an interesting upgrade system. So you can get power-ups that are scattered all throughout the levels. You know, I should have set this up first, but anyway, whatever. It lets you scroll through different weapons using the shoulder buttons, R and L. But then the ZL and ZR are actually your shooting buttons, because this game actually does have something that's unique. The right stick controls the trajectory or the aiming of your bullets. So it's like a twin stick shooter and also a side scrolling shooter, which I have not run into yet. That is actually not something I've seen, and they do it to a pretty good effect, and I'll get into that in a minute. We're going to set up the actual game now because I'm a mess, and so I should have done this before. So yeah, there's a giant planet, like it seems like it's kind of planet sized, but there's this huge ship that's going around. It's an alien ship that nobody knows what it is, but it's going around eating other ships, and we don't like this. Habroxia. Yeah, thank you. That's actually, I reviewed Habroxia 1, actually. I just forgot about it. I have seen it once before then. Anyways, so there's this huge alien ship. We don't know what it is, but it's eating ships, so we got to fly in and like investigate. So the gameplay kind of takes place in what looks like it's basically the innards of a ship that might be alive, and it also might be machine, and it's all alien, and it's crawling with bugs. So it's like it's got this really like great, you know, kind of you're both fighting, you know, ooey gooey bugs. And you're also going through the lining of, like, you know, basically the digestive tract of a machine that eats machines. Like, you literally bust in the teeth, like, to get in there. You know, they're, like, sitting there munching, and they're, like, these... But they're, like, big, spiky, like, platform-type things. But you can kind of tell, like, these are, like, you know, this ship's, like, teeth. And then, you know, there's a tube that's going down and stuff. And it's just, like, really cool, like, stuff like that.
Oh, we just got raided. HP Browns, thank you so much for the raid. Kitty Skies, how are you doing? We got a lot of people jumping in here. We should probably bring up, we are talking about Remote Life. Available now on pretty much all platforms for $18.99. Chris, you were talking about it. What I love the visuals in this game. It is such a distinct, realistic look to it.
Yeah, so this game kind of strays away from the usual shmup formula and goes into, like, realistic looking kind of graphics. But it also, like, you know, movements from different things, kind of, it's like different graphics stacked on top of each other, if that makes any sense, a little bit puppet-like. And it's really great because it makes for these really interesting, like, weird movements from enemies that, you know, again, they're aliens, so, like, they're supposed to look really unusual. But then bugs come up and they actually, you know, do look like bugs. And another thing that I really like is as you're taking out the little enemy ships and bugs and stuff that come out, like, when they blow up, there's just this little plume of smoke that just, like, kind of hangs for a second and then wafts away. It's, like, really, really nice looking. Sound is good,
touches.
Too. Yeah, the sound is good in that, so it has, like, this funny, not funny, I guess it's funny if you have a dark sense of humor, but, like, it shows, like, what happened to a ship that explores the ship before you get there, and it ends up completely in the dark, and then it, like, throws on the lights, and then this big bug creature comes out and eats the ship, and it does this scream that is kind of creepy, and, like, you hear this scream a couple of times from different big monsters in the game, but it kind of sounds like the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, no.
it did make me laugh, even though I was like, oh, that's a really cool little, like, horror effect kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. It's, like, it's cool because you don't quite know what to make of it. It just looks cool and it's, like, it's different, and that's, you know, different is good, especially when you're putting a shmup out on basically the best, you know, this is the Switch version. So the Switch is, like, so replete with, like, shmups that it's a little hard to stand out now.
I would guess that the game might have better life on Xbox or PlayStation that doesn't have as many shmups as Switch.
I would hope so, yeah. But I think Rootbeard just asked how was the performance. It's just fine on Switch. There's nothing to slow this thing down. So yeah, like, it's really cool, like, because and I should also mention the lighting, because lighting comes from, like, sources rather than just the whole area being well lit. So it's like you're never left totally in the dark, at least as far as I played, but, like, if a area is lit, it's because there's a light that you can actually see. So, like, that's really cool too. But yeah, like, it's really great to be kind of, like, you know, going through this thing with a, like, an undulating kind of metallic background and, like, you know, just wondering what's going to be around the corner and, you know, what's going to, like, scream at you next. And like I said, it's really cool that, so the game, like, basically, like I said, you get your three weapons that you can choose from, and you get to unlock more ships as you go. I think there's, like, four that I could see that were unlockable through different things. And you can choose those with one shoulder button, and then you're shooting with the other shoulder button. And then, like, the A button is, like, your bomb. So, like, I ended up doing, like, Eagle Claw, like, piano style, holding the controller, which is unusual for this kind of game. But, you know, I made it work anyway. So, like, when you pick up a pickup, like, it's actually, limited ammo, and then it goes back to, like, your regular ammo, but you can kind of, like, stockpile them a little bit, and, it's really cool that it gives you, like, such a variety of weapons, but only some of them, like, will actually last, you know, the whole time. And, I like that about it. And again, you're not only aiming, like, your ships, gun, like, with the right stick, so, like, you can shoot behind yourself if you aim behind yourself, but then that's all you can do. Sometimes you'll come across turrets that you can take over, and then they will also aim in the direction that you're aiming. Now, you can't aim them in opposite directions, but it's you know, a really, like I said, it's a cool mechanic that I don't see often enough in these kind of shooters. So It does play differently than what you'd be used to if you're coming into this from like a classical like shmup background or none at all.
Yeah. Well, the game's sitting at $18.99. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think this one's really good. It's definitely got the content. It's really unique. And yeah, I'd say this one has won me over for sure. Like, because normally I don't like shmups as much when they have tiny bullets. The tiny bullet shmups, because those are a little, because yeah, when you start off with like your Gatling gun, it's like little dot, you know, little pellets instead of like the big shiny, you know, bullets that we're used to in like cave shooters or whatever. So I usually don't have as much of a fondness for like this style of like more realistic or like, you know, less filling the screen up with bullets kind of game. But this one, like I said, thoroughly won me over. So yeah, I say this one's a worthwhile purchase, and definitely check it out at least. So
cool. All right. Next up is Biomotor Unitron, developed and published by SNK Corporation, released May 25th on the Switch for $7.99, a sci-fi fantasy RPG on an epic scale. Defeat mighty enemies with the strongest humanoid battle robot, Unitron. Purnell, what's going on in Biomotor Unitron?
In this game, the main character's goal is to become the top rank competitor in what's essentially like dueling robots, like, or battle bots. So, but you're battling Unitrons, which are robots. So at the beginning of the game, you have to choose a name for your main character and also their assistant, as well as the gender. It's essentially like a male character and a female character. You just switch them one or the other, and then you name them. And then once you get dumped in the game, you are immediately just kind of given our Unitron robot to play with. And they tell you to walk around the town and just talk to everybody that exists in the town, because like a little small hub that you can choose who you can choose from with like a dialogue tree. Like, you know, select this location. Now select this name. This guy's going to ramble to you, and then you move on. But then after they've gone through that, they immediately set you up with like, okay, you can put new parts on your robot or you can go into a dungeon. And it's a pretty straightforward concept. You go to the main map. You choose from one of four locations, all of which have an elemental affinity. And you go into one and you just kind of explore it. As you walk around, you will be tasked with various random encounters. Random encounters being just like a one-on-one combat match between like an enemy and yourself. You get two attacks, each representative of the weapon on your arm. So if your left arm has like a sword in it and your right arm has a chainsaw, you choose one of those two attacks and you do damage. Then the opponent attacks you, so on and so forth. The thing that makes attacking special in this game, due to the fact that you don't get to select any special abilities, is the fact that each weapon comes with an affinity, like a elemental affinity. Fuck, man, it seems like my reviews are all elemental affinity related. But, like, for example, fire is strong against wood. Wood is strong against like water. Water is strong against fire. So on and so forth. And there's, like, this one weird one, like, new one to me, like mirrored element, which reflects the weakness. And then, like, light, which is immune to everything but dark. And it's interesting. And then one of them is, like, completely nullifies all elements' weaknesses. But that's pretty much all the attacks are based around. You're essentially balancing attack to attack and hoping that you can do more damage than not and them doing damage to you. Once you run around a little bit in a dungeon, you might either get killed or you might decide, I don't want to die, I'm going to leave, which you can just select an option from your selection of menu options, just say leave, like no special item required. You can just leave the dungeon and go back to town. And once you're there, you can then take the money you've acquired to go to the shop and buy new gear. You can buy new leg parts. You can buy new weapon arm parts. You can buy a new core. You can buy a new body part type. And all these things have visual representation on your on your Unitron mech. And depending on what you buy determines how they augment you. Might increase your attack power. It might increase your energy drive level. Energy drive being what you use to do different attacks. Like, if you use, again, like another random weapon type, the weapon has an EP cost, which is the cost to do an attack in the level. And if you run out, you have to either take a turn to charge yourself up or use an item to charge yourself up. So increasing that's pretty freaking important in this game. Same with the hit points, of course, because if you run out of hit points, you die. You can then equip these things to your part by going back to the mech shop, or you can take the gear you have and combine it with a resource like steel, metal, mithril, whatever, gold, and you can potentially upgrade it to a new tier weapon. But of course, being that it's this type of game, you can't just say get the best metal and attach it to the best weapon and then get the best super weapon. Instead, your partner has a level up cost that he levels up as he develops things. So as he gets a higher experience level, he's able to craft better and better stuff with higher odds of succeeding at the task, because you can fail and ultimately lose all the parts you use to try to pull off the combination. So, but they do at least tell you the percentage odds, so you don't just go in blind doing this thing or whatever. But that's essentially the main loop of the game. You go to a dungeon, you fight monsters to get money or open treasure chests to get items, then take back to town, further upgrade your robot, and then eventually when you feel confident enough, you can enter the arena. You pay a cost to join a battle or tournament, and then you attempt to go through a series of battles to level up and rank to eventually become the master of arms or whatever, which is master of masters, which allows you to say, I won the game because I am the ultimate Unitron battle champion. The game itself is, there's not a ton going on with that. Again, even exploring the dungeons is just going deeper and deeper to eventually find like some really good items at the bottom if you can get to the bottom of the dungeon. Nothing crazy dramatic, because again, this was like one of the first games to release on the Neo Geo Pocket Color back in 1999. I bought that game back then. It's fun. It was fun then, it's fun now. But there's some things worth noting about this, because it is an old game for an old portable system being ported, such as, again, there's not a ton going on with the game. You're not going to get this deep, intricate plot. You'll talk to people in town sometimes, and they'll be characterized, but you're not going to come out of this going, wow, what a really awesome story this game had. Instead, you're just going to be like, oh, I talked to that guy. He didn't give me anything for free. Moving on to the next thing. The next thing worth noting is that earlier I mentioned the concept of elemental affinities against enemies or whatever. So the game itself does tell you what the elemental affinities are for different weapons when you put them on, and also what elemental affinity your actual Unitron mech has, but it doesn't say it in words. It has this dumb symbol that, for the life of me, I have no idea what the symbols refer to. I just get lucky. And then eventually I got tired of trying and went to and found an old FAQ from the Neo Geo Pocket game that lists what all the affinities of the weapons are, because someone else did the legwork for me. So I use that to gauge what the actual symbols mean. But as a result, if you don't do that, you're going to be doing a fair bit of guessing, like, what is this about? Is this the affinity I want? And then you'll probably find yourself doing dumb things like what I was doing before, which is, say, for example, going to the wood dungeon, knowing that everything there, or most of the things there, are wood element, and watching to see what weapons do real damage to them. But, of course, you can't equip weapons on the field, so if you go in and try two things and they fail, you go back to town and change your gear up. So, things worth noting there. But mainly, that was the thing that mostly annoyed me about the game, is the fact that I had no idea what that refers to. And also, when your main character levels up, it says control increases, but I checked the in-game scan of the actual official manual that released with the game, and I also checked, I say I don't want to go that far, maybe because I checked it, but I might have missed it there, but the manual, the actual game's manual, does not mention what control does, like what the control stat refers to, or what it means. I don't recall seeing it on the in-game actual in-game like help screen either, but I don't want to say 100% that it's not there, because I could be just as well slipping like I did earlier in that other review. But I know for a fact that it is not in the freaking manual, because it wasn't in the manual when I read it back in 1999, and it was not in the digital manual when I read it on the screen. So also annoying in that regard. But again, this game, it's got a pretty small blueprint. You're not going to be taxing yourself with like lost time. Like I can't avoid, like you won't find yourself saying, I can't believe I invested X amount of time getting this much money to buy this part and it was useless. Maybe you'll find yourself saying that if you spend like a really rare mineral to try to increase, improve a weapon or something. But ultimately, there's a lot of fun in just the trial and error of like, okay, I'm working with a binder, like a stapler, which you can equip a stapler. Or now I have drill arms. I like my robot having drill arms and like a mermaid fin leg setup, or battle treads. There's just something fun about that level of customization and then taking it again and battling other robots. From what I could tell, one thing that was sad about this, though, is that the original game lets you trade with other players. And from what I could tell when I went to the menu, it said this is disabled.
Yeah, like, trading is not implemented in this. It It's on the store page. They have a little note at the bottom of the description. So that's a bummer.
Look, it's not, yeah, it's not a game killer, but it is a shame that it's not there. I feel like at the end of the day, I don't want to give this a fuck it, why not, because I think it deserves more than that. I honestly enjoyed the game for its time, and playing it currently, I still felt like it had like a pretty addictive gameplay loop. So I'm going to go so far as to say it's still a buy it, even in the modern day. Just go into it knowing what I said before. Like, I hope you're not buying this expecting an epic plot. Hell, now I think about it, I was going to say, like, not like Monster Rancher, but I don't think Monster Rancher had a particularly major plot either. Just
not really.
Battle fucking monsters. So just come to this battling robots and you'll have fun.
Cool. All right, next up is Ganryu 2, developed by Storybird Studio, published by Just for Games and Pixel Heart, released April 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. Ganryu 2 is the sequel to the Ganryu game made by Visco on Neo Geo back in 1999. The universe takes place in a feudal fantasy Japan, which is strongly inspired by the story of Takezo Musashi.
Musashi.
Yeah, Takezo Musashi, whose adventures are unfolded in a series of books, mainly The Sword in the Stone. Chris, nice. What's going on in this?
I didn't realize that this is a real character, like from fiction, or, you know, fiction other than video games. But yeah, this is a sequel to a I'm going to go ahead and say probably not super well-known SNK game, because I'd never heard of it. And, you know, I know some Neo Geo stuff. But this joins the likes of Monster Boy, actually, in a game getting a sequel like 20 plus years after the last thing came out. And, this one, basically... The other one was, an action platformer, a little bit of a beat-em-up element. This is much the same, except that they really kind of crank up, like, a lot of the elements of it. I was very intrigued by this story, because, again, I researched the first game, because I was like, well, okay, I've never played this first game, and I don't know Neo Geo that well, so if you're a Neo Geo fan, don't talk to me. Also, don't try and correct me. In the first game, it's like this guy Musashi is like bothered by, I guess, the spirit of a foe he had thwarted, a guy called Koshiro, and he was like, you defeated me before, but now I'm gonna have the upper hand, blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay. And then I start this game, and you know, Musashi is just meditating in a field in his full ninja regalia, which, by the way, the only part of the mask is like actually like a mask, like what we wear. So it you know, this guy looks like he practices his social distancing more so than being a ninja. Also, I like that his mask and his pants are just hot pink. This is a ninja with like just the brightest hot pink pants in the world, and I love it. So our hot pink ninja is sitting there meditating, and then suddenly there's Koshiro again. He's like, well, the last time you defeated me, which presumably was the last game, it's like, you defeated my body, but my spirit has lived on, and I'm going to take my revenge on you. And I'm like, this guy must not be very good. He keeps getting beaten up by the same guy and destroyed somehow, and he just keeps coming back. This time he's coming back, and he's brought his army of rainbow ninjas. No joke, you fight ninjas of every bright ass color under the sun except black.
Oh, like, God.
Just bright orange ninjas, bright blue ninjas, ninjas with white with blue, like, you know, lining, hot pink ninjas. There's yellow ninjas, all kind, just every kind of ninja that you can imagine. This game is like really, it's excellent pixel art, just stunning backgrounds, you know, just great looking animations, really nice and fluid. But yeah, this game is definitely in the Neo Geo vein of like, we don't care what a ninja is presumably supposed to look like, we need colors, damn it. And so they will throw lots and lots of characters at colors at you. You know, things explode in blue smoke for some reason. You know, the screen shakes violently when you hit people with your sword, even though there's no blood or anything. It's just like stuff explodes all the time. This game is just like I said, it's just this huge presentation. The sprites are like really large and like everything feels like really hard and visceral. Like when you hit things, it's just like boom, you know. Even when you're just like hitting like a torch to get a power up, it shakes the whole screen, you know. It's just like this game is just on some level of caffeine I can only aspire to. And I love it for that. So yeah, you basically run around. Your character has all the best ninja moves at the right at the beginning, where it kind of feels like a new game plus. Because it's like you have the double jump, you have the spinning sword attack, you have the dash in midair that you can combine with the double jump to just cover all this air. You have like you can run forward at double speed and like kind of a dash move as well while slashing your sword. Like the game doesn't hold you back like that. This game is just, like I said, it lets you do like all the stuff, you know, just all these acrobatics right out of the gate. And these other ninjas are just like kind of jumping in and like, you know, staying there for a second and then like stab the air or like throw a ninja star. It's got one of my favorite things, which is ninjas hiding behind wooden crates and then they pop up to throw a ninja star at you. One of my favorite NES games is Wrath of the Black Manta, and it also is like a lot of it is and the same thing with like Shinobi and such. It's like ninjas behind crates.
Nice. Like,
I love that that's in here, because like the wooden crates are so out of place in this game. But anyways, yeah. So you travel through. I don't know if it's more than five because it's five on the map, but there's like all these different like actual places in Japan. You know, you start off in Hokkaido, and which is again beautiful and like foresty and like just this lovely place. It's not gritty at all, really. Like you pass by like these nice bathhouses and stuff, you know, probably a nice little family restaurant while, you know, exploding every ninja under the sun, on the like paint swath of like the Home Depot.
Oh, God.
Or, you know, the paint selection. Ah, messing it up. Anyways. So yeah, like it's really cool, although it is challenging because you have like a lot of, even though you're able to do like all this stuff, it's like in your desire to run around and blow up every ninja, like you're going to miss some stuff that's getting thrown at you and you'll take some damage. But you can take five hits before you die, and you can die like four times before it's game over, and then you just start the stage over. So the game's not super serious about holding you all that, you know, back all that much. Plus you can pick up your kunai, which is your throwing knives. You start off with some and you get some drop from enemies, and that just, it's as powerful as your sword. It tends to take down things pretty quickly, and so you can shoot stuff as well. You can also build up powers and use ninja magic. As you know, ninja magic is a thing. And I have yet to actually do that because apparently you need a lot of power up to like actually cast some ninja magic, so I sadly cannot speak to that. I kept dying every time it got almost all the way filled up. But yeah, like this is just like a, like I said, it's a fantastically like overstimulating 90s arcade experience. And yet, like I said, it's a brand new game for 2022 based on a game that was released in 1999. So,
speaking of 1999, that's the price. What do you think?
Yeah, this one's a buy it if you're a fan of like these kind of like, you know, if you want to harken back to like the old Ninja Gaidens and Shinobis and stuff, but you know, you don't want it to be like quite so cruel. It's just such a great time. So I'm very impressed with this one for that reason. You know, as a platformer, they're not doing anything too special. They're just doing it with such flair that again, with a ninja that doesn't even hide any part of his face except the nose and mouth, and wears these gigantic, like, just MC Hammer hot pink pants. You know, I cannot but support this, so go for it.
Works for me. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Walking Zombie 2, developed and published by All the Games. Released May 25th on PS4 and PS5 for $11.99. The world after the zombie apocalypse is a grim place. You were born into it, so you'll have to struggle to survive and fight against many kinds of zombies, bandits, and dangerous boss monsters. You'll be taking important story quests and many side quests, level up your perks and skills, sell them by equipment, and communicate with some unlucky survivors. For now, what's going on in Walking Zombie 2?
You pretty much play as a survivor individual who is pretty noted at the beginning of the game. You're special because apparently in a zombie apocalypse, you are a human being who does not turn when bit by zombies. They have surprisingly voiced dialogue scenes, but the story is kind of there, but I don't know. It's motivating, but not enough to be like, hey, this is a deep plot, but I digress. The main thing is that you're a human being who is essentially immune to zombieitis or zombology or whatever term you want to give it. The gameplay, however, is essentially structured as your main character being in a hub or hubs, because you do eventually change to new locations. And you are tasked with taking missions from a variety of people within your camp. It could be, I don't know, like a nurse or a little girl or your elder or any number of things. But it essentially says, hey, take on this mission. And when you take the mission, you go to your map from your main menu and you choose one of the locations on the map, most notably the place where the mission is located, and you are transported there. Once you're there, you are pretty much given the task. Go kill X number of zombies and then fill this container with gasoline. And that is pretty much all you can do when you're in a location, pretty much. There's no, like, random ammo items you can find on the ground or anything like that. You're pretty much running specifically to do the thing they want you to do. So you'll have a main weapon and a sub-weapon. It can be either a gun, it could be a melee weapon. That's it, pretty much. But you can see either a gun or a melee weapon, a variety of different guns, and they each use their own specific type of ammo, mind you. But still, you can use either of those things to dispense enemies. And when the enemies are coming at you, it's essentially three ways you can hit them, most likely maybe more like two, but basically body shots or headshots, with headshots doing the majority of damage, like critical damage wise. And that's pretty much, you'll be pretty much killing those guys, killing enemies, fulfilling the mission, get your reward by going back to town after concluding the mission, and then going back out and doing another mission. That's mainly what they want you to do. Do a thing, go back to hub, go out, do another thing, go back to hub. And all the missions generally take are doable within like 5 to 10 minutes. They're fairly short things. I assume it was probably because it was originally a mobile game. I went and looked it up. Boom, it was a mobile game. So I was right about that. Which
leads me to my big question with this is, it's not priced like a mobile game because it's $12, but it has microtransactions like a mobile game, including
lots of them,
including up to $100 for a pack of coins.
Yeah, it has a lot of them.
How bad is it? How necessary is it? Am I going to drop $12 on this and be like, oh, well, fuck, I need to drop another 20 on this coins and perk bundle, or I can't get any further in the game?
I hadn't come across any scenarios where I was like deadlocked on being unable to, but if a person's not good with using ammo, I could see a person running out of ammunition and needing to buy more. So what's first thing to note about this is that even if I didn't spend any money on anything, based on how the menus are designed, it is in your goddamn face everywhere. Go to this menu, oh, you can spend some gold currency, but the gold currency is rare, so you can spend money to get the gold currency to do the fuck. You got that. There's a menu where it's like you can buy like limited daily items or limited time lease items or whatever. It's very annoying. I'm not even going to beat around the bush there. I freaking hated seeing that pop up in a variety of different menus, including like where you want to level up your skills, because there's like a skills and perks menu. The perks, you get perk points for every, was it three to like three or five levels? I can't remember which of the two. And I was like, okay, well, I found these cool books on the ground, because every once in a blue moon, you do find like an item on the ground that you can take back and use. It's only been magazines that I've mainly found so far, but still. And I was like, okay, I should read this magazine. And the game was like, you can't read this until you learn the reading perk. I was like, okay, well, let me see if I can find the perk screen. And I went and found it. I was like, oh my God, I have to spend. I don't have very many mastery perks, so I guess I'll spend the two that I've got right now and learn to read. And then on the right-hand side, I was like, you want to buy some perk points for only like $7? Like, oh, fuck you. But it did do that. So it's, even if it may not be required, because you can still just earn the perk points by leveling up over time, they don't mince around the idea of like, it's right here if you want to spend money to do it. And I hated that. I hated that a lot.
I don't mind when games have the microtransactions. It's just, don't be overbearing with how you put them out there. Like, Kemco, to be fair, like, they have them in all their games, and you don't need them, ever. You just get them if you feel like having a quicker time.
Just that you don't. It's not even that you just don't need them. It's even that. I mean, you guys can vouch for me if I'm wrong on this, because it's been a while since I've played one. But I don't really feel like it's even in a place where it's like it's all up in your face when you need to do something. No, it's like you have to go to a special menu to do it, which is how it should be. Go to a menu because you know you want to spend money on this game. Otherwise, leave it the fuck alone. But this game is not like that. I don't want to go so far to say the gameplay itself is boring, because clearly I had to pull myself away from it to do this game here, playing more soldiers. But at the same time, it wasn't really. Have you ever had that thought where you're playing a game and you're engaged in the loop, but you're not sure if the loop is fun or if you're just caught up in the wheel, so to speak?
Like, am I enjoying this, or am I just passing time?
Exactly. And I feel like with this game, it was more of the latter. I was kind of like doing the mission, ticking the box, going out of town, turning it in, go back out and do it again, turn it in. But I never really found myself going, oh boy, I'm looking forward to going and doing this. I wonder what I'll find at this new location. It was just like, pew, pew, pew. Okay, go to the next marker. Okay, go to the next marker. All right, and this guy dropped an item, which I didn't have to find. It just popped up when I killed a guy. I just happened to get some ammo from him. Like, it wasn't really great. It was just present, which is sucky to say, because I'm sure they're listening to this, or maybe they're listening to this, and they're probably like, I hope this guy's giving us a good review. And while I'm not saying it's a bad game, I am saying that there's really, like, nothing about that made me go, oh yeah, I would totally recommend this as a try. It was more like it's there. It's there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's $12. What are your thoughts?
I'm not going to say deny it, because I don't think it's like that bad off, but I am going to give it a very low tier try. Like, if you just want a game where you seriously just go from hub to location to do a quick mission, come back, do it over and over and over again, I mean, you'll be busy here. But I mean, I also think there's probably better games out there to do the same damn thing. So take that for what you will.
All right, works for me. That is it for this episode. Holy shit, took long enough.
And I was like, man, mine are going to be so short. And then I started talking about it. I was like, oh man, I like these games though.
It never goes that way, does it? It always takes longer than we think it's going to.
Yeah, and I didn't even like say a lot of the stuff I wanted to say. Like, I actually bought Biomotor Unitron while we were talking too.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
I wanted it, but I was like, I think Purnell should review it.
I hope my review was like, oh, I understood what Purnell was talking about. I'll go ahead and buy it, as opposed to being like,
yeah, yeah. Like, I have like a lot of Game Boy RPGs, and it's a lot like that, you know, not heavy on story, but it's still like fun stuff.
Yeah, that's like, you'll enjoy this then. Like,
yeah,
totally. It's something cool to be like, hey, this is what my Unitron looks like. Because I remember being that way back in the 90s before social media. I had to just show my Neo Geo to friends, like, hey, look at my Neo Geo. Look at my guy. Look what he looks like.
Okay, I will post a screenshot when I get them together.
Yeah, man. I like that. We'll trade screen swaps.
There you go. Even though we can't trade anything else. Yeah.
Well, we have Twitter. We'll just be like, here's my Twitter, Unitron Mech. We are nerds. That's why we review video games. Come on. But there's nothing wrong with that.
That's the joke. That's the joke. Because I'm a nerd too.
That's the joke.
It's like me calling Jacob fat. Like, I'm fat too.
I am a neurotic little nerd. That's the joke.
Anyway, that is it for this episode. Thanks to you guys for being here, doing your thing. Thanks to Tim and Brooke for being here and ducking out early, like the smart decision. It always is. I got to do that eventually. Like, now that it's on Discord, I could just walk away. I'll just mute myself and walk away.
Technically, couldn't you have been doing that from Skype, though?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not tethered to the desk while we review. I think the only downside would be like, hey, the game is a buy it. And it's like, okay, we need a transition. Joe, where are you at, man?
Like, sorry. I give this game a try. And it's like, okay. Anyway. Well, music. I guess we're gonna play the sports ball theme song from Nickel Punk. So
yes,
here we go. Yes. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Birds will fly, hearts will soar. Play your favorite video games, or I'll cry because you should be playing fun games. God damn it!
That didn't rhyme.
It wasn't supposed to.
It should have rhymed.
Never.
Soul and sports ball.